controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Me who said it. Good evening from London. This is Talk Radio. I'm Howard Hughes. Slightly different edition of Ian Lee's show tonight. You know that I'm in with Hayley tonight. We're going to be doing the usual stuff later. But on a day like this, we simply have to talk about what has been in the news. And I think do it maybe in a slightly different way in this hour and into the next hour too, probably. But we'll see how it goes. So, as you will know, if you've been listening to James, if you haven't, if you're driving home now, it appears that once again, we are the pendulum swinging in the arc of time. A phrase I've just made up there. I'm surprised at myself with that one. Because we're not getting anywhere. Appears that we're on the road to nowhere once more. To misquote John Lennon, tonight, so this is Brexit. And what have you done? Tonight, MPs decided they like the smell of Boris Johnson's deal, but not the timetable for the rubber stamping or the rejection of that deal. So, what happens now? Tomorrow, it's back to normal for Parliament. MPs don't even sit this Friday. That's the run of business. They're going to be debating the NHS tomorrow. Speaker Burkow, a man with a great turn of phrase, whatever you may think of him, he knows how to use words. He says that Brexit tonight is in limbo. And who can disagree with that, hey? And again, all of us, the ordinary people who are not sitting among the 600-odd in that chamber in Westminster tonight at this moment, we all have questions, but who's listening to us? Here are the questions. If you can think of more, I want to hear from you. Will we Brexit? How do we Brexit? When do we Brexit? Will there be a three-month delay? Well, it appears from the words of Mr. Tusk that we heard just before the news. There may be, on their side. Will Boris Johnson get a delay or push for a delay till November 15th? That's on the wires as well right now. Will there be an election? We were asking that one 6 months ago. When might that election be? What does Europe think about this tonight? And crucially, what are you, and I include me in you, because we are the people, you know, it's supposed to be about us, isn't it? We are the people who are going to be affected by this, however it pans out. What do you think tonight? Have your MPs, all of them, if you turn on the telly, you can see them there, sitting on the green benches. You can see Boris Johnson with his tousled hair making his various points and Jeremy Corbyn making him an offer tonight that the Prime Minister appears not to be too impressed by. What do you think of them? Tell me tonight, is this what you want? If it isn't what you want, have you got, and I've got to say, I'm getting to the stage now after nearly 3 years, the thick end of 3 years of this, where I don't know what I want. And that's the truth of it. My head hurts permanently whenever I think about this. So what do you think our MPs, you know, the ones that we elected, what do they owe us now? Because they owe us something. They have earned a figure I heard today, and the calculation seems to work, north of £200,000 since the Brexit referendum. And they are now telling us that it's difficult for them to be able to debate 110 pages of the deal within the next 3 days. So that's why what has happened tonight has happened. That's why there's a pause in this. That's why it's temporarily come off the rails somewhat. Brexit has gone on so hard and so long, don't you think, that psychiatrists say that some people are suffering from mental health issues. Month upon month of raucous rancor have turned the United Kingdom into what I'm calling the Untied Kingdom. And I have to say, here's something, just before we go to our political correspondent on College Green, here's something that I wouldn't have been allowed to say when I worked at the BBC, because my colleagues would have lynched me for one. And, you know, you just can't say these things, but I'll tell you, I voted to leave because I felt that the Conservative Party, as we've seen through history, and all politicians do these things at times, but we're using this process of a referendum, we know this, to heal the rifts and salve the divisions in the Conservative Party. And I have to tell you, and maybe I shouldn't be proud of that, that's why I voted to leave. If you ask me what I think about it tonight, I haven't got a clue. And that's where I'm at. And I'm guessing that you think the same way too, but maybe you don't. I want to hear from you. 0344-499-1000. We promise we get back to the normal stuff sometime north of 11 o'clock. But first, let's cross to the hardest working person in this organization. Charlotte Ivers, our political correspondent on College Green. Charlotte, for those people who maybe, you know, missed the last couple of hours, where are we at?
Hello, Howard, from a very dark and cold College Green.
You have my sympathies. You do.
Well, so tonight has been, in many ways, a historic night, in the sense that, for the first time ever, MPs have found a Brexit deal that they can agree on and have a majority on. However, no sooner had that happened, we had another motion put forward by Boris Johnson. That was a timetabling motion, and that essentially gave them just 3 days to debate that deal and get it through Parliament. And they turned around and said, that's not long enough. Mm. Boris Johnson up on his feet after that, saying, OK, I will speak to the EU about this extension of Article 50. And we just heard from the EU, they are recommending their member states accept that, at which point there are noises coming out of Number 10 tonight that means they're going to push for a general election. So a momentous day in some ways, but we are no closer to that holy grail of leaving the European Union that Boris Johnson so desperately wants.
So as I said then, it seems that I was substantively right when I said that MPs in general like the smell of the deal. Or maybe they're just sick and tired of it all and they decided, yes, we'll go for this. But they don't like the fact that they are being ramrodded and railroaded into doing it in just a couple of days. That's the thick end and the thin end of what we're looking at here.
I think in many cases that is true. A lot of MPs are a lot happier with this deal than they were with Theresa May's. However, in a lot of cases, essentially, MPs were just voting to get past this first stage. And what they will be able to do now, well, if Boris Johnson brings it back, when it comes to the third reading, that's when you can put down those amendments for things like a customs union, things like single market membership, things like a second referendum. So a lot of MPs will just have been voting to get to that point, and they'll be able to turn around to Boris Johnson and say, actually, you know what, I was really aiming for a customs union all along, sorry.
So is the likelihood from what you said then, as was hinted before we entered today, that Boris is, as you say, behind closed doors tonight with the lights burning, maybe over a brandy, whatever he drinks, considering a plan to somehow press for an election?
That is what we're hearing, and I'd be wary of telling you that's definitely what's going to happen, because as we see, the mood is changing so quickly here, it's hard to tell until something's completely confirmed. The problem is, if Boris Johnson does want to get that election, it's going to be very hard for him to get it through Parliament. He will need two-thirds of MPs to back that election. And Labour have already said they will not be doing that until they can be 100% confident that risk of no deal has been ruled out.
So what happens then? If Boris cannot get a motion for an election approved, and we're not going to be going to the polls, and we won't go through that process of perda and all the other things that we have to as the media, and we'll be into a whole new ball game then, but some people may breathe a sigh of relief if we were in that position. What transpires then?
Well, look, he's got one more chance. If he can't get that two-thirds through, what he could also do is declare a vote of no confidence in his own government, and he only needs half of MPs to be able to do that. Now, the problem with that is if that happens, you don't go straight to a general election. There's a short kind of grace period where any other group of MPs can try and form a majority and form a government. So that might be Jeremy Corbyn plus a few of the SNP, or it could be a sort of government of national unity. Remember when we were hearing about that a few weeks ago? So
yeah, I thought that one had gone away, but no, it may return.
It might rear its head again, it could, but Boris Johnson will really not want to do that. He does not want to be known as the Tory Prime Minister who put Jeremy Corbyn in Downing Street, so he will be doing everything he can to avoid that happening.
And in the meantime, Charlotte, Jeremy Corbyn stands up and makes what sounds like an offer to the Prime Minister. What was that all about?
So Jeremy Corbyn essentially said to the Prime Minister, look, work with us. We don't quite like your deal as it is, but if you work with us and make some compromises on a timescale that we prefer, that gives us longer to scrutinise this, we will eventually come alongside and vote to leave the European Union. Now, there's so little trust on both sides of the House. I don't think Boris Johnson will have taken that offer seriously, much as MPs on Jeremy Corbyn's side of the House are really struggling to trust Boris Johnson when he says things like, we will not be tearing up workers' rights or environmental protections.
And what about the whole issue of a second referendum, which of course the Lib Dems are very keen on and, you know, have been from the get-go. Where is that now?
Well, that one's stalled a little bit. So essentially the hope from the Lib Dems was that the bill would pass its second reading tonight. Obviously that's just a sort of thumbs up to go into the next stage, and then when we got to the third reading they have the opportunity to put the second referendum before the House. Now I don't quite think there's a majority there, but it's certainly closer than it would ever have been. Now Boris Johnson, having pulled that motion from the House, he has control again. He can push for this general election. And remember, the government has primary control over the House of Commons order paper, and I think the last thing Boris Johnson will want to do is have a second referendum. If that happens, he really will be dragged kicking and screaming there.
Yeah, in a ditch, whatever. So, by the sounds of what you said then, the smart money says that one way or the other, by one of two different routes, the likelihood is, although it's always hard to call this stuff, isn't it? And people tend to record what you say and then play it back to you later, but the likelihood is that it's going to be a general election, unless something else happens.
So, there's a slightly odd element here, which is that the last date a general election can be on this year is the, let me get this correct for you, it's the 12th of December. And the reason for that is that school halls, village halls will all be taken up with Christmas events. This is genuine civil service guidance that we cannot have an election past that date. And if you've got to have 6 weeks running in, essentially, if we don't get a general election called by the start of November, we're clear until the new year. So the time really is running out for Boris Johnson to get what he wants here.
So literally, as you say, the sands of time are running out on everybody. It would be unusual to have a general election so late in the year. In my lifetime, the latest I can remember in the year a general election being held is November. Maybe precedent says that there have been others, but yeah, it's a fascinating period, isn't it? Very, very quickly, Charlotte, last question, just a quick one. Are MPs, from what you experience and you know in the bubble that is Westminster, really aware of the frustration in the minds and hearts of people, whatever side of this untied kingdom, as I call it, you know, they may be?
Oh, I think they're very, very aware. I think also a lot of them are just frustrated themselves. You know, the text messages I've been getting today have just been, you know, variations on the theme of what are they doing? When will this end? They are as sick and tired, if not more sick and tired than the rest of us, I think, by this never-ending cycle we seem to be on. And it looked just briefly last week like there might be some resolution, but I think any hope of that today has just come crashing down in the last few hours.
Well, Charlotte, in the cold in Westminster College Green, I've been eavesdropping on you for hours, and well done for what you've done. Get some sleep. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Charlotte Ivers, our political correspondent, in the bowels of Westminster College Green, overlooking the Palace of Fun, as you might call it. So that's the situation we're in. I said at the beginning of this, I want to get your thoughts about this, because this is about, and you will hear this, if it's a general election campaign, you can put money on the fact that Boris Johnson will certainly be using the phrase, or using a phrase that amounts to it, the people versus Parliament. So let's get the people on now. Let's have a talk with Colin in Albury. How are you doing, Colin? A different show for us tonight. How are you doing?
Yes, it is. And well, I was upbeat last night, as you could probably hear. But today, I've been heard this bunch of stupid school children arguing in a classroom like that. You know, it's like I've seen kids acting better at school than seeing all this lot going on for 3 months now.
I think there's going to be a lot of people agreeing with you there, but they would say to you, we have to explore all sorts of processes and procedures that we haven't delved into for years, indicative votes, meaningful votes, prorogation, all of those things. This we have to do in order that democracy is fulfilled. Would you buy that?
And we can't do that in 3 years.
So when you voted, which I presume you did in the referendum, how did you vote?
First of all, I was blind, and I am still mostly disabled. And I managed to drag my backside from between the bed sheets and go and vote. So I did what I was asked to do.
So you were that motivated that in spite of everything, you got yourself down there and you registered your vote. And having seen what you've seen, do you feel the same way now or do you feel differently? Because there are lots of people who have been telling you for the last couple of years that maybe you should be thinking differently because you weren't told the whole story. What do you say tonight?
You know, I want to tell you what I want to see happen, right? But what I will say is this. I went and voted. I did what I was asked to do. And if it was a rerun now, I wouldn't bother. because it shows me that that event that happened in 2016 didn't count for naught.
Who's your MP in Albury?
What's his name now? It's always on the tip of my tongue. hang on, I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, sure, I mean, was your MP a Remainer or a Leaver?
It's Speller, my MP, John Speller.
Okay, well, famous name. Which side, without me looking it up, which side of it all was he?
I don't know, because I didn't think it was my, it wasn't my sort of thing to go and ask people which way they want to.
All right, let's turn it around then and say this. What would you expect from Mr. Speller now?
I would expect him to do what I'm going to say every MP should be doing now. They wanted an extension again so they could debate again and play ping pong with the vote. So I want to see, now that they're arguing, they want to be in that house and they want to carry on debating, I want them there every day now, up until the 31st or until they get a solution, right through Christmas. Mm-hmm. No Christmas holidays.
Colin, your MP voted Remain. Your MP's a Remainer.
Yeah, well, I gathered that, but I didn't think I should ask him. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it's none of my business, really.
Are you going to be putting some words into his shell, like? Because we could be coming up to an election, you know.
Yeah,
he's going to be looking for your vote.
Funnily enough, I have. Well, I won't be voting for him. But the thing is, I tried to phone a few times over the last couple of months, and I'm not getting through.
What, to him? To his office?
To his office.
Okay, well, of course, they're all very busy at the moment, as we're seeing, so well, you know, maybe he's just so busy.
Well, I thought, well, because they've been prorogued and things like that, I thought, well, he's not around.
Okay.
So I didn't bother since. But I'm saying this. I want everybody to get on now and start saying, you want to be in there debating, no Christmas now, all of you, including Burko. He can forget his retirement until this bloody thing's over with.
Colin, we've got to park it there. Thank you so much. I think we know which side of the tracks you're on about this. Colin there in the Midlands reflecting a ton of frustration. And I think that frustration is going for people, whichever side of it you're on, or maybe you're, you don't know what to think now, like me. Maybe you're beginning to think that way. We're going to try and cut through the mire tonight. As Mr. Burko said, the entire process is in limbo, or as he would say, limbo. So we're going to have to try and feel our way forward. So for the next hour and a bit or so, we're going to be doing this, just reflecting what's going on, and more importantly than anything else, hearing what you think about it. And then we'll get back to business as normal here. Howard Hughes, in for Ian Lee at Talk Radio. Our phone number here. Love to hear from you about all of this. We can talk it round. You can have your say. 0344-499-1000 is our number.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
Howard Hughes for Ian Lee, Hayley Hayes here too. We're doing Brexit for the next hour or so, trying to get an idea of what you think about all of that. Thank you very much, Steve, for your tweet, just saying basically no point in voting now, says Steve. Thank you for that. And also just one other I wanted to go to here, and I'll do it in a moment. I'll find it in a moment. Okay, let's get to a man who is no stranger, as they say, to this station. Nick Dubois, former MP for Enfield North, former Chief of Staff to the Secretary of State and author of Confessions of a Recovering MP, a Brexit. Nick, thank you very much for doing this. Long day for everybody in Parliament.
Indeed it was today, Howard. Good evening to you. And a long day that we had a brief moment when it felt like history was being made, that after 3.5 years, the Parliament finally agreed on something and back to deal for only 15 minutes later for basically to plunge a bit of a downer on it. Which means, effectively, at the end of this day, having agreed a deal, it's now on pause and not going through Parliament.
And can you understand, looking at it from where you're at now, how the public will be, many segments of them, I'm getting tweets from them, I'm getting calls, we're going to get up here from them, being extremely frustrated because, exactly as you say, it is a complete balance here. On the one hand, we've got the first sign that maybe we're getting somewhere with approval of this thing, and Boris a happy man for that reason. But on the other hand, MPs deliberately voting against the program motion, the timetable for this week. Boris, of course, wanted to push it all through very quickly. They weren't having that. What is going on?
Well, look, first of all, in respect of the point that Boris is pushing this through really quickly, I find that a bit disingenuous because so much of this withdrawal agreement that is being discussed has been on the table, because a lot of it represents the original withdrawal agreement, where there was non-contentious stuff that was being discussed and debated in Parliament endlessly. So we're really saying they had 4 or 5 days to digest what was a document of 110 pages, but actually focusing very much on things like the Northern Ireland Protocol. So it's a bit of a misnomer. What's going on here is opposition politicians who predominantly want to remain or at the very least have a second referendum have introduced a cover for themselves by being able to say, I voted for the deal to their constituents should they end up in election, but actually using what's called a programme motion, which meant that there was no way now that we can meet the 31st of October deadline, remember, set by the EU, the 31st of October deadline, to get out of Europe and get this deal approved in law.
So, so there is an ulterior motive behind that, and that motive is so that those people who voted to not go with the timetable basically know there's going to be an election at some point, or they suspect there is, they smell it in the wind, and it's supposedly being talked about by Boris and his team tonight. Well, you know, that they wanted to make it appear that, you know, we are going along with this, we're willing to compromise, and, you know, there's a new spirit in the air, but what they don't want ultimately is for this thing to go through.
Well, yes, and remember, first of all, the Labour Party official line was not to support the deal anyway. They're all over the place. But there were rebels who wanted to put the national interest first, if you like, and get a deal over the line and put us all out of our misery and let us move on. But equally, some of those then voted against this programme motion. And why did they do that? The reason they do that is because they want as much time as possible to delay the progress of what we call Boris's deal to come into law, delay the progress, put amendments down, get a second referendum, do whatever they can to frustrate the government. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here. But the bottom line, if you're a member of the public who's looking in, you will be saying once again, the Prime Minister has been frustrated by Parliament in getting us out on the 31st of October. Not just his deadline, but actually the deadline set by the EU, who told us not to waste this time. The extension would run to 31st of October. And now, of course, we are looking at a further extension.
And what do you say to the occupants of the Palace of Westminster who say that 3 days effectively is simply not enough time to go through this 110 pages? We need time to go through it forensically. I heard somebody put up the argument today, which left me slightly bemused, I have to say, that there was a specific piece of legislation to do with a very small number of animals that was debated for a longer period.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, go back to one of my original points. Much of the withdrawal agreement actually is non-contentious and has been in Parliament for months. It goes back to Theresa May's deal. What we're talking about here, even if it was the full 110 pages, plus another 110 pages of explanatory notes, we're actually asking MPs who are paid £75,000 a year to actually concentrate for 4 days to challenge, ask questions, and digest this document. There are board directors of medium-sized companies who could do a better job. So I don't buy it entirely, this argument. I respect, however, the fact that when you are in a parliament, and when you've got a minority government, these MPs are perfectly entitled to do what they've done, but they're going to have to answer to their electorate for, once again, frustrating Brexit and frustrating the Prime Minister, who amazingly confounded everyone by first of all getting a deal with the EU and then getting actually a majority for it in this House of Commons today, before they then went and deliberately undermined it. And now we're faced with the prospect of an extension, and I think we're heading to a general election.
Well, when I was a young man studying politics a very long time ago, very, very many decades ago, a few decades ago, very sadly, nothing that I learned from some of the great lecturers and experts that I had teaching me prepared me for something like this. I just find it, and I'm sure the public, as you referred to, Nick, find it astonishing that we're in this position. And those who, and I wonder what your take just quickly on this would be, those who don't agree with the timetable and are doing it for whatever purposes they are doing that for, that is what we might call, isn't it, a high-risk strategy for them?
Well, yes, because basically, well, there's 2 points here. First of all, on the high risk, it is conceivable we could end up with no deal, which is why the Prime Minister has effectively ratcheted up no deal preparations once again. Look, the thing about the extension is that we were the Prime Minister was compelled by law to ask for one, but the EU could turn round and say, actually, we're going to give you another 2 weeks, so get on with your scrutiny. You've got 2 weeks to sort it out. And if that failed, there would be no deal. On the other hand, they could come back and say, you asked for 3 months, here's 3 months. And my instinct is the Prime Minister will say, I'm not going to be held to ransom again by Parliament. I cannot govern without a majority. You, Mr. Corbyn, promised if you got an extension, so no deal was not possible, you would agree and have a general election, which is why, on or around the 5th of December, it's entirely possible we'll trudge to the polls, probably with our snow boots and warm coats on, to try and return a government, and I hope it will be a Conservative government, led by Boris Johnson, with a majority. So whatever he agrees, he can get through Parliament. The point is, we have a Parliament that has got a minority government that is in office, not in power, and the opposition are playing merry hell with the wishes of the people expressed in a referendum. It's deeply frustrating, but as you say, who could have predicted this 20 years ago when you and I were in college? Mm. 20 years ago?
And what of the people, as they say? Nick, you and I could have a very, very, very long conversation about this, but I'm going to let you get to bed after a long day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Howard.
Take care. Nick Dubois there, man who's been heard recently presenting programmes here on Talk Radio, with unique knowledge because, you know, he was the former MP for Enfield North and had a senior position in the government himself, so knows how all of this works and, of course, has all the contacts. And you heard some of the whys this might be happening, and you also heard his view of what the upshot of all of this is going to be. Promise to get to some of your tweets and texts coming very soon. Want to get to some calls as well, 03444991000. Let's get to Brian now in Washington, Tyne and Weir. Brian, how are you?
Good evening. Hi, Howard. I'm not really into politics, but I'll tell you what it is. I'm quite happy that they've now actually reached the deal.
They haven't exactly reached a deal, but they're warming to a deal. I think we can put it that way.
All right. Well, I know they had 30 votes, MPs or something.
At this stage of it.
I'm glad if, they've got some kind of foundations put in place, because I think a lot of people were worried about leaving the European Union without a deal, because we heard all the scare stories about things in the shops going up and up and up in prices, about people's medication not being able to get medication from doctors.
Now, Brian, this is important. I was saying this at the top of the show. Last week, psychiatrists, I think there was some big psychiatrist report out, maybe in the week before, said that there was some kind of syndrome, that people were beginning to suffer with psychological anxiety and all sorts of things, and I can understand it. It gives me a headache because of all this. Are you genuinely worried about the consequences of dithering about all this?
I'm just glad, to be honest with you, Howard, that they've actually got some progress tonight, and I can't understand why they're making such a fuss about having an extension, because you need to read through every single particle of the document to see what the amendments are. You kind of just, oh yeah, we'll just vote it through, but you've got to look at it properly, because obviously that's what MPs have paid for, scrutinise documents, say what's in documents and decide what.
Well, I think we get that, but one of the debating points today is that they surely can do 110 pages of scrutiny within 3 days, but that's a point we've talked about. We'll talk about it again. Yeah. If it comes to an election, if it comes to a general election, would you be comfortable with that? Would you vote, and which way would you go?
I don't like the way... I used to vote Labour years ago, right? But I've changed now. I don't know who to vote for, because Labour, to me, with Jeremy Corbyn, and they're just going to go nowhere. And a lot of working class people are in that situation. I really don't know who to vote for. But I tell you what it is, if I was living in the northeast of Ireland, if I was in Belfast, I would certainly get rid of the DUP, because they are traitors to the people of that part of the world, People in Ireland and the North voted to stay in the European Union, and the DUP would not want to stay in the European Union and want to get out.
Of course, if I had them on now, they would say they're just being true to their political principles, like all politicians, Brian.
Well, yeah, but the people in that part of the world voted to stay in. And if I was, living in that part of the world, and if I was a traditional DUP voter, I would actually vote Sinn Féin in, to get them in just despite the DUP.
I mean, you highlight what is a very important point here, and it's, you know, it's what I did with voting in the original referendum. People are now not voting necessarily about the issue primarily as point number one. It might be point number two. People are voting strategically these days, and that is something I don't think we've seen to this extent ever in this country. Brian, yeah. These are difficult times. Now, you're in Washington, are you in the fishing industry area? You're near the coast, aren't you? Is there a fishing industry there?
I mean, Seaburn's not far away from Washington, to be honest. You know what I mean? But we're in Seaburn area, and it's quite a big area where there's a lot of, like, tourism and stuff. You know,
I'm just trying to get an idea of how people locally feel, the ones that you see.
People, obviously, a lot of people are concerned about Nissan. I've got family members who work for Nissan, and they used to work nights, but they've been taken off the night shift because now Nissan don't do nights now. They've stopped all that. I think what's going to happen with this is going to be bad news. I think within the next 5 years, Nissan's going to pack up bags and leave the Northeast.
Nobody knows that, but it's still, all these things are uncertain, and that's what a lot of the campaigners and talking heads on all of this have been saying all the way through this. Brian, uncertain times. Thank you very much for calling tonight. 03444991000 is our number. Howard Hughes here for Ian Lee. Beginning of the show slightly different because of the momentous stuff that's been breaking all around our ears today, and I'm trying to make some headway with it. And most importantly, apart from talking to politicians and former politicians and experts, I'm trying to get a sense of what you're thinking about this tonight, because, you know, this, some of the politicians, it appears, and I may be well wrong here, have lost sight of that. Ken in Newcastle, how are you, Ken?
Very well, Howard. Thanks for allowing me to speak. I've been observing this very closely, as I guess many people have in the nation. But in my opinion, the chaos and confusion in our nation, it now demands, in my opinion, it demands that the people be given the opportunity to decide whether to Brexit or remain in the EU.
Second referendum, then.
Yeah, this is the only answer to the problem, because what lies ahead will affect thousands and thousands of families. But if the people know it was their decision, it will help them to accept what is coming in the future. If they are forced into this, bullied into this by politicians who very sadly have been lying and been very devious with the nation, this will cause tremendous harm to this nation for many years to come, in my opinion.
Okay, second referendum. The only problem is, and I'm sorry if you've heard this talked about on this radio station and every other outlet of the media for months, but, you know, the point is that when David Cameron stood there for good or ill to announce this thing, he said, and they all said, Osborne said it, and, you know, I believe in these words as well, but, you know, everybody said, this is the referendum to end all referendums, quotes, this is it.
You're going to
be talking about having a second go because you didn't like what the first go produced. That's the difficulty we're always going to have with that thought, isn't it?
Yeah, but Howard, the nation never made the decision with an informed mindset. Now we have
the government
mindset.
Spent $9 million of our pounds on a leaflet that everybody got, supposedly explaining all the ins and outs.
The lies that came from, particularly from Boris Johnson, and not only him, they were totally dishonest with the nation. Now we have an opportunity. We know the situation. If there's a cliff edge Brexit, we have been informed by experts there will be tremendous downfall of this economy and very high unemployment.
But of course there is a report on the supposed consequences prepared by experts that the government is not releasing to us for whatever reasons it may have. So, it's hard to talk about that with authority, isn't it? Because we don't quite know.
Yeah, well, that's a very crucial point. Why are they hiding this information, and why are they afraid to allow the people to make the final decision? Because the government know that a hard Brexit especially, will do tremendous damage to our nation and to the people, men and women who've got children, and bringing up families, mortgages to pay. This has been just party political situation here rather than a genuine concern for the people of this nation. It's been disgraceful to observe, actually, and I'm not too much concerned about politics, but I've been watching the dishonesty and the chicanery shown by many leading politicians. I believe it's actually brought shame upon our nation to Europe and all over the world when they see the chicanery.
One very fast question, Ken. You're in Newcastle tonight, but your accent tells me that you're originally from Scotland.
I'm in London now.
Oh, you're in London, okay. But your accent tells me originally from Scotland, I think. I hope I got that right. How do you think tonight's news, just very quickly, is going to play north of the border?
Well, if there's a Brexit, Howard, I am certain, in my opinion, that the Scottish people will vote for a referendum, and I believe that there's a great high possibility they will separate from the Union, and also Northern Ireland, if there's a Brexit, they will unite with Southern Ireland, and the United Kingdom will be broken up. In my opinion, this is also a very serious situation.
Well, Ken, we're going to hear a lot of people saying what you've said, but you can hear how the nation, the untied kingdom, as I call it, not United Kingdom, deliberate typing error there, people still as divided as ever, nearly 3 years down the track from all of this. What do you think? 0344-499-1000. I promise that in the next hour, back end of it probably, we're going to get back to what we normally do here, but these are big times we're looking at, and you know, all of our futures, our fate literally hangs in the balance. 0344-499-1000. I will get to your tweets and texts as well. You can text TALK, your message to 87222. You can tweet at TALK Radio.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on TALK Radio.
Well, I didn't think I'd be doing this tonight. Cutting through the pap. We are TALK Radio, trying to anyway. Bart, I understand your point on Twitter. Pointless speculation, you say. Problem with it is, it's like being on a plane. And you know the plane's got a problem. You know the pilot's up the front. You can't talk to him. And all you can do is speculate with the other passengers what's gone wrong. And somehow that makes you feel a bit safer. Maybe that's part of what we're doing here tonight. We're trying to get somewhere. Baffled Onlooker says this is as unexplained as it gets. And who else says? John, I think it is, says Sapphire and Steel need to come in here and sort it all out. And Cupcake, thank you very much for your tweet. Got to get to Steve Pearce now, expert on matters of this kind, professor of EU and human rights at the University of Essex. What do you make, Steve, and thank you for coming on here tonight, of what we have seen today? Was this expected? Where are we at?
Oh, good evening. Well, I think a lot of people thought that the bill on implementing the Brexit deal would go through on second reading. A lot of people thought it probably wouldn't get through the timetable motion, so that it wouldn't go through in 2 days as the government wanted. And then, inevitably, the EU has now seen where we're at in the UK and has acted on the request. They're thinking of getting together and deciding on exactly how long the extension of our EU membership would be. And it might be short, it might be longer, it might be the 3 months the Parliament wanted, in which case that's just enough time for an election if that's what people really want.
This is a very hard question to ask anybody, and I'm sorry for asking you, Steve. And, you know, all we need is a thought about it. Are we going to get to a Brexit? And are we going to get to the Brexit that Boris Johnson's deal, in inverted commas, describes and outlines?
Well, actually, there's, I think, a quite easy way to get to the Brexit in Boris Johnson's deal. That would be to not have an election and just to have an extra month or so to discuss this bill implementing the Brexit deal, and there's probably enough time to get it through and probably enough votes to get it through if you had an extra month. But I, for whatever reason, I guess they think it's their political advantage. The government would rather have an election. They think they'd do well in it, and then we'll end up with, I guess, Boris's deal at the end of it, if they do well, of course, as well as they're expecting, and as most polls say that they will. But, of course, elections are funny things. You don't always get what you want to get, and polls can be wrong, and opinions can change.
Of course, it leaves us in a fractured situation in two ways, on two levels. Our politics here, I suspect, will be fractured and divided for many, many years to come. And our relations with the European Union, whatever they may be going forward, they will also be severely affected. I mean, we are going to have problems, I suspect, but you will know better than me, that will last us for maybe a couple of decades, don't you think?
Possibly. I mean, leaving in a sort of smooth and orderly way, I think, is a lot, on the basis of a Brexit deal, even if it, Mrs. May's might have been a little bit more smooth and orderly. But leaving in a smooth and orderly way, I think, is likely to lead to better relations in the longer, medium term, short term than leaving with no deal. It may even be better relations than staying in the European Union, since so many people in the UK are opposed to it, and that is, you know, bound to affect us if we tried to stay in. So that's maybe the best solution possible, although all routes, I think, lead to some kind of friction and division. That's probably the least divisive route.
When I was studying politics at the University of Liverpool 1,000 years ago, we used to read books written by people at the University of Essex. It's always been a leader in political thought and analysis. We haven't seen days like this before. These are very unusual times. As somebody who looks at these things professionally, how does it make you feel?
Well, I mean, you know, this Chinese curse of may you live in interesting times. I mean, there's something new every day, it seems, and there's twists and turns, and at one point I was sure we'd leave with no deal, at one point I was sure we'd have an earlier election, and now we're back on for an election again, perhaps. So, goodness knows what will happen in the election. And I thought the last one would be a big Conservative majority, like most people, and of course it wasn't. And, you know, I thought Mr. Trump wouldn't be elected, I thought all sorts of things, and a lot of people thought the same, and they were surprised. So I think we should all learn not to be too sure what's going to happen. It's just a question of just lying back and seeing what happens and what fate has in store for us.
As for the kind of reaction, just very quickly, we're going to get from the EU tomorrow. We've heard hints from Donald Tusk tonight that, as we expected, they're going to go along and let us have an extension. But do you think that we're in for a bit of chiding from their side because of the mess that this is seen as by people who are not in this country?
Well, I don't know if they're going to chide us. I mean, most of them tend to be diplomatic most of the time. You know, occasionally you have Mr. Tusk and his circles of hell comment, and you know, the Luxembourg Prime Minister gesturing at that empty lectern, and when Boris Johnson had left, things like that. But I think there's a lot of diplomatic biting of tongues. You know, you might occasionally hear it, but I think they just want to sort of wrap things up in a diplomatic and orderly way.
So they are feeling the exasperation that many members of the public and people listening to this tonight are feeling too. Thank you, Steve Pearce, very much indeed. Steve Pearce, Professor of EU and Human Rights, University of Essex. Let's get to Chris in Colchester, who called 03444991000, which you're perfectly welcome to do. Love to hear from you tonight. Chris, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it's just the biggest farce I've ever seen. We're starting to look, on the world stage, we're starting to look like a banana republic, just without the bananas.
So what do you think should happen then?
Well, I want to see an election, but,
the smart money says you might well get one.
Yeah, the regime wants an election, but the opposition wants to keep the regime in power. It's kind of the opposite of what happens across the world. But Boris Johnson is a joke, all this.
Well, I think we can guess the answer to this question then. If they announce an election, it's good. Obviously there's a run-up period of 5-6 weeks or so, you know, before it can happen. It may not even happen till the beginning of next year, but it may be late this year. Which way would you cast your vote then?
I don't usually vote. I mean, the vote for to leave the EU was the first time I've ever voted for anything that I've
done. Why don't? So you're somebody who's a serial non-voter. Why is that?
Because it's like choosing between what strain of flu you want. There's no difference between any party. Whereas the referendum, there was a clear choice. There was a difference, what I thought, but actually there was only one option on the ballot paper. I've realised that now. But if I care deeply about it, but the Brexit Party is the only one that pledges to take us out of the European Union. Whether I believe Farage or not, that's a different matter, but I'll be voting for them if that's the case. If there is an election, I won't be voting for the Conservatives. They've made this country a laughing stock. Jeremy Corbyn has been against the EU his whole life, and now he's completely done a 180, and the other parties aren't even worth mentioning. I mean, it's a joke.
And Chris, if somebody said to you, by voting as you intend to vote, the ultimate aim, the ultimate end of that might be to get a result that you don't want, and you might get a hung parliament and any mix of parties perhaps coalescing together, or, you know, the complete polar opposite of what you might want to see. Do you see what you're going to do as a risky strategy, or is it, in your mind, as it sounds like it is, the only thing that you can do?
Yeah, there's always that risk, and, you know, that could, that's possible that could happen. But if, say, the Brexit Party got 10 or 15 seats, then they would have some, you know, they'd have a bit of power, like, you know, like the DUP have had with 10 or whatever they've got. It can make a difference. But, yeah, that's the risk it's going to take. Mm. But you've seen what it's like now. It couldn't get any worse, could it, than what with Parliament? We've got so many people that are in that Parliament that were elected on a pack of lies, that they said they'd respect the referendum result, and they haven't. And, you know, they've done all they can to stop it, and so has the government. So it needs to be a clear out.
Chris, thank you for that. I get exactly where you're coming from. Thank you. Chris in Colchester, here's Tony. Tony, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, Tony, I think. I'm trying to make sense of it all. What do you make of it?
It's very difficult to make sense of it all, to be honest with you. It's like a poison chalice. Everyone gets it. Boris had it. Theresa May had it before that. It's a poison chalice.
Boris actually had managed to get some champagne into that chalice. I mean, it's a bad analogy, but, you know, he'd managed to get something that started to look like MPs were beginning to like the smell of his deal. You know, it looked like, in his mind, we're starting to get somewhere.
Yeah, but it's never going to happen because nobody is ever, ever going to agree in all the facts. I mean, we had a referendum. We did.
How did you vote in it?
Actually was to remain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to do that, and my reasons I'll explain later for that.
Tony, can you do us a favour? You're on a mobile there. I don't know if you've got one of those little microphones dangling near your chest, but can you speak a bit more clearly into it?
Yeah, can you hear me better now?
Much better.
Yeah, so, I was a Remainer, and that's reasons, and I'll explain a little bit after this. But, you know, it was 3.5 years ago, and I agree with a couple of calls before. Nobody knew what we were getting into. Nobody knew these troubled waters we were getting into.
So what now then? What you're looking for a general election now to sort this out, are you?
I don't think that will solve it, and I don't...
Second referendum?
No, I don't think, because we've had one. What's the point of having it and ignoring it and going, well, we'll have this one? It's like keep on going and going and going until... Oh, we get the right result.
So that sounds like a bit of a sort of council of despair then. If we can't have not an election, not a second referendum, what are we going to do? We need to stick with this deal and try and get it through on some kind of timetable. Is that what you're saying?
No, as a country, we're in limbo. Mm-hmm. Because if we had the second referendum now, I probably think the majority would say remain, because they're so fed up with what's going on. So fed up. I look at my children, who are 16 and 15, and asking me, Dad, what's going on with this country?
And what do you say to them?
It's difficult to explain it. I said, well, no confidence? Yes, no. Where are we going? Don't know. Now, my children are half Austrian, half English. So they can, and they both speak German, they could go and live in Austria, no problem at all. And I cannot give them a definitive answer to say.
Are you encouraging them when they get a little bit older to maybe go and study or work away from here?
No, not at all. They're asking me what's happening in this country. And Boris, nobody can give them a definitive answer because it's such in limbo. 3.5 years ago we had this referendum. Nobody knew when you had a referendum what Article 50 was. Not one person.
So if your children, who are, you know, they're not small children, they're, you know, they're politically aware because they're teenagers now, as, you know, that's the way people are today. If they ask you, Dad, what would you like to do? What would you like MPs to do for you now? And I'll ask you that question as well as them. What would you say?
Once again, I am halfway in between. I don't know if it's better to remain. I don't know if it's better to stay, because I always think about my children. What is better for them, and I'm not unique in this.
Mm. Is it causing you anxiety? This is not a funny question. I was saying this at the beginning based on a survey. Is it causing you anxiety? Sounds like it is.
It annoys me that we're constantly going around in circles, and there is like a political gravy train that goes round, and they're all on it, and the more they carry this on, it's
great
for them.
So it sounds to me, and I'm not putting words into your mouth here, that you are, because of what's happened in the last 2.5 years, whatever, you are now disillusioned with all of it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and 100% delusion with all of it. But you know, it affects real people's lives.
Mm.
And Boris and everybody. I think he's trying to do a good job. I thought Theresa May got hammered, and it was disgusting what they did to her. But it could ruin anybody, politician.
So you are looking for, in pretty short order, something decisive, whether it's the announcement of a general election, whether it's a timetable for proceeding with this deal and the vote on it. You just want some definite, definitive action, yeah?
You've got a youth coming through, and right now we're probably in the biggest decision making. I can remember in modern day history, and we cannot make a decision for it.
It's astonishing, Tony. I'm going to have to leave it there, but a lot of people will share your frustration. Just tell me very quickly, what location are you in, just so I know?
I live up in the world.
Okay, you're in the northwest. Thank you for that, Tony, very much. You heard Tony there. He's got kids who have partial European roots, connections, they're wanting to know what's what, and they're 15, 16. What will happen to them? The other side of what we're going through here. You heard Tony here, disillusioned, baffled by it all, as so many people are. We're trying to make sense of it. Howard Hughes in for Ian Lee here. We will return to our normal format in a little while. We've got some more of this to do because it's important. If you want to call, have your say, tell the politicians what you think, 0344-499-1000. Do it now.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Fuck my breath with my shoes. Talk like that, I'm feeling angel and a thing. Can only get better. Can only get better. Now I'm
I seem to remember a certain politician who I, was part of his very first radio phone-in, using that as a theme tune once. I don't know whether that would apply right now, though. All we can do is hope, isn't it? We hope that things get better. But at the moment, in the words of Mr. Burko, the Speaker of the House of Commons, we are in limbo. And that's where we are, to do with Europe. Howard Hughes in for Ian Lee, Hayley Hayes here too. We're going to be getting back to normal a little later, but we've got to do this Brexit business. Because I think we've got to try and clear the fog a bit, and fog there is. Thank you very much, Brad, by the way. Brad calls it a Brexit pantomime, says it's making me physically ill. Well, you know, there are people really suffering like that, according to psychologists and others. But there are people who are just like me, and maybe like you, frustrated beyond belief. We know it's complicated. We know it's difficult. We know it needs talking about. All of that we understand. It's been north of 2.5 years now, and we're still swinging in the wind. What is going on? Okay, let's get somebody else on to talk about this. Femi Olawale, spokesperson for Our Future, Our Choice, a group of young people campaigning for a people's vote on the Brexit deal. And a man who you'll have heard many times on this radio station, but perhaps not in these circumstances. Femi, thanks for coming on tonight. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, it means that MPs are in favour of the deal in principle, whether or not whatever ends up comes out at the end of it in the process when they add amendments to it, and whether or not they vote for it at the end, that is an entirely different thing. It also means that they weren't willing for the Prime Minister to essentially jam the thing through Parliament without giving MPs a chance to look at it. I think that's essential.
Okay, what do you think, having observed this process, will happen next? The smart money is saying maybe a general election.
You might be right. That might happen. However, I mean, I think I just need to bring in the fact that a general election isn't the democratic way to solve this. We have a deal that is unlikely to change, and if you're having essentially a general election decide to do what's next, you're essentially saying let's have a general election in the basically to act as a second referendum. And if you look at what happened last general election, 54% chose parties whose manifestos ruled out no deal, yet because of our first-past-the-post system, the majority of seats went to parties that were okay with no deal. So if that were to happen again in a general election, that the exact opposite of what the majority hope for and vote for ends up being the rule that happens in Parliament, that would be a democratic travesty. So I
really?
Think the only... Well, if the exact opposite of the majority will is what happens, then that's anti-democratic, logically.
Well, a democratic election is by definition democratic.
Well, you can call it democratic. That doesn't make it democratic. If the exact opposite of what the majority vote for is what's expressed in Parliament, that's not democratic.
Right, so you wouldn't be happy with a general election which would be, there will be other issues in it, of course, the NHS and all the other things, but that would be predicated largely on policies towards Brexit. You don't think that that would produce what you want?
Well, like I said, if you have an election where the majority vote for parties that are saying, let's have a second referendum or let's stop Brexit, but a majority of seats go to parties that are saying, let's go with no deal or let's go with this deal, then the exact opposite of the majority will is what will end up happening. You can't call that democratic.
So you've been consistent. Unlike some of our politicians, you've been consistent in saying this. You would like... for the sake of our young people, and we had a caller on just a little while ago talking about his teenage children who have, you know, partially European roots. For the sake of the young people, you want a second referendum. It's not looking like it's going to go that way. What do you think politicians should bear in mind then when we consider the whole idea of perhaps dipsticking the public's opinion once again with another referendum? You know, how would you try and persuade them to have one, I think is what I'm saying, really.
I'm saying, well, it's a mass thing. Unfortunately, I have to make most of my arguments based on their self-interest, not the interest of the country. And in their self-interest, if they're aware that they've got a deal that you don't have, that not all Brexit voters are in favor of. For example, you've got Nigel Farage, who says it's the second worst deal in history. He even said the other night that in a referendum on that deal, Remain wins every time. That's a direct quote. You've got the DUP, so the Unionists in Northern Ireland, saying that they're not happy with a deal that essentially splits the union in terms of regulations. Then you've got a significant portion of Brexit voters who are opposed to this. And if MPs vote for something that, well, obviously Remainers don't want and a significant portion of Leavers don't want, they're going to have the vast majority of the country opposed to them. So in their interests, look, moving forward, if they want to get elected again, there can't be something that annoys most of the country. The only way they can avoid blame, avoid responsibility, is to say, we've got the deal, let's pass this decision to the people. Because we're basically their cover.
If there was to be... And we're not saying that there is, but if there was ever to be a second referendum on this, leaving aside all the arguments that I know people will throw at it, to, you know, like it's going to be best out of three and all the rest of it, we've seen the Brexit debate, we've seen the minutiae being talked about by politicians here, we've heard them tonight say 3 days is not long enough to even discuss a 110-page document, and that's been debated too. If there was a second referendum, how would you formulate the question or questions?
Do we leave on the terms that Boris Johnson has negotiated, or do we stay members of the European Union? It is that simple. Because in 2016, Brexit was 4 words, leave the European Union. It's now been filled in. Essentially, I'd call that basically signing a contract and letting the other side write the terms of that contract 3 years later and then claiming, well, you've already signed. We've now got the completed version of what Brexit actually is, and it was negotiated by the leader of the official Vote Leave campaign. So that deal should be put to the people.
But when we elect politicians and they make a series of promises, and traditionally many of the promises are ditched or dumped or reneged upon or simply not delivered in the way that we were told they would be, that's just part of the way democracy works. Similarly with the referendum, we were given a sketch. Do you want to go? Do you want to stay? 48-52 voted to go. That's how the system works, isn't it?
Yeah, that is how the system works. And every 5 years, when we see that politicians haven't lived up to the original promises, we vote them out. And often sooner than 5 years, and there'll be a special push if the promises are completely failed. And if you actually look at it, there's been more times between now and the last referendum than there were between the last 2 general elections. And we're talking about having a third in the space of 4 years. So the claim that the idea that, well, we've made the decision, therefore we're stuck with it regardless of how much things change, goes against the very essence of democracy. Democracy is precisely about continued consent for the way our government is run.
You speak so passionately about this, and I've heard you so many times, Femi, and it's nice to talk with you about this tonight. Personally, how is this making you feel?
Personally,
I mean, inside about this.
Just anxious and worried. that if we get a Brexit deal that even Brexit voters don't want, we'll end up with a blame game that lasts a generation, with Brexiteers blaming Remainers, saying they ruined Brexit, Remainers blaming Brexiteers, saying they ruined the country, and we will never, ever heal from that. And that terrifies me.
You represent young people. You're doing this for them, for their interests. Presumably they're emailing you, tweeting you, texting you. What are they saying?
I did a talk today, and they come up to me and just basically ask how can they get involved. I mean, especially at the start, when I would go to young people and ask them how they felt about Brexit, they'd all say the vast majority would say that they were thoroughly opposed to it, but then they'd ask, well, there's nothing we can do. And now they're seeing that, oh, hang on, there might be another democratic event, a general election, a referendum, and they're desperate to see how they can change things, because they can see, as well as we all can, that this isn't going well for anybody. And so they're asking me, please, just what can we do to help? And so I try and tell them, make sure you get registered to vote. Make sure you talk to your parents if you're not old enough to vote. And make sure that you stay appraised of what's going on. Because if we end up with a Brexit that essentially narrows your horizons and turns everybody against each other because nobody likes the end product, that'll be very, very bad for our future.
Because whatever happens, we've got to rebuild from the divisions that this has engendered. And that is going to be a really difficult thing to do. Do you get the sense, just very quickly and finally, that some of those young people are losing interest in the political system and the political process?
Well, there is a risk of that. Right now, it's going the right way. You're getting more and more young people involved because they're seeing that there's a chance to really change things. However, if Brexit were to go through, something that goes fundamentally against their values and which they'll be the ones paying for, because let's face it, it was the working age population of the UK that voted Remain. If you take the under 65s, people who will literally have to work through Brexit voted against it. And if something like that happens and they feel that they did everything in their power to stop it, but nothing was done, there will be people that feel that, well, what's the point?
Okay, just very quickly, I've just got a text in. Tim says to us, and thanks for this, Tim. Referring to you, he said, we've had a referendum, says Tim. We've had an answer. It's the politician's job to deliver, he says. A second referendum will never happen. Your thoughts?
Well, if the answer is something that all people who voted for Brexit wanted, then fair enough. But right now we're seeing the head of the official unofficial Leave campaign and the head of the Brexit party saying that he thinks that remaining in the EU is more popular. You've got the unionists in Northern Ireland saying that they would never accept it and voting against it today. So to claim that this is the will of the people simply isn't right.
Femi Oluwole, thank you so much. No doubt we'll hear your voice on Talk Radio again. Spokesperson for Our Future, Our Choice. A group of young people campaigning for a people's vote. Second referendum, effectively, on the Brexit deal. We will see how that transpires. David's in Bermondsey. Hi, David.
Hi, Howard. Yeah.
What do you want to say?
Yeah, I just want to say it's clearly extremely difficult to untangle ourselves from Europe. And I don't envy the politicians having to sort it out. Mm. But maybe that proves that Europe has become too big.
Mm. In what way? You mean too many nations, too many policies, too many bureaucrats? What?
All of that, I guess. I mean, I've never studied Europe, but from my own perspective, maybe it's just got too big in every way.
And so you think for that reason it needs to be minus us?
I really don't know what the answer is, but maybe Europe should be simplified. There should be, you know, less rules. I don't know what the answer is, but
I get. So what is what you're saying behind that? And I'm old enough to remember the earlier days of the European Union, where it was an economic community, when it was a much simpler thing. It wasn't a political union. It wasn't thinking about that, as far as I'm aware. Is that what you mean, that we need to be going back to just simply things that talk about trade, not grand political ambitions?
Yeah, maybe a simplified version of Europe. Because clearly, there are people in this country that are not happy with Europe. I mean, most of the presenters on talk radio are anti-Europe. So they must have good reason for it. And, you know, there's a lot of people...
No, I hear what you say. I was just... my eyebrows were just raising slightly when you said that. Sorry, you were saying.
Well, there's clearly the same thing in France as well. There's people that want Frexit, for example. I mean, I'm no expert, but maybe it's just too different. I mean, because Europe are blaming us, but maybe they should take the blame as well for making Europe so big and so difficult for countries to come out
of. Okay, last question for you in Bermondsey, David, tonight. What would you like to happen now that we're in what Mr. Berko calls limbo?
you got me there.
No, listen, there's no shame in having that position, because an awful lot of us, it's, you know, to coin a phrase, doing our heads in.
I think we need to say to Europe, we need 10 years to sort this out. We need 10 years.
10 years?
Well, if it's that
Hang on, what happens? I mean, I don't expect you to have an automatic comprehensive answer for this, because the politicians haven't, but what would happen in those 10 years?
Oh, no, we'd have to stay in Europe. No, we'd have to stay in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And maybe 5 years, I don't know. Because we have to arrange the trade.
Isn't it better than just not to leave in the first place? If you're going to stay 10 years, you might as well stay 100.
I understand that the simplifications of staying in Europe. But the trouble is, in another 10 years, you're going to have another Nigel Farage. You know what I mean? Saying we've got to come out. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, David, I think, look, there's no shame, and it's perfectly all right to think that way, because I promise you there are going to be an awful lot of people hearing these words now saying precisely that. Our number here is 0344-499-1000. We're getting to Kyle now, our friend in Rochdale. How are you, Kyle?
I'm doing good. Howard, how are you?
I'm all right. A bit of a different gig for both of us tonight, Kyle. What do you make of it? What do you think?
Well, I think it's the right quote, that politics makes strange bedfellows of us all.
It does. But it forces us to think in ways that perhaps we don't want to. It takes us out of our comfort zone, don't you think?
Well, I was going to say, the fact that it's all based on temporary alliances, the fact that I'm more aligned to Nigel Farage, which I never thought I would say, because I was a Remainer, and I accept the arguments that my friends have said, which is, you know, in a football game, you don't keep playing, unless you're Man United, so you get the result you want.
So are you, you're behind Mr. Farage because he is what it says on the tin, is that right?
Well, not even that. It's because I think he knows that this is, you know, we had Mrs. May's deal, which was not brilliant anyway. You know, we've got Mr. Johnson's deal, which has come down, it's even worse than hers. He sold the DUP down the river. He sold the SNP. And by the way, the clearing of the benches today when Ian Blackford went to stand, I thought was appallingly disrespectful.
We've seen in Parliament behaviour. You know, I remember going on a school trip and watching the Reverend Ian Paisley stand up and scream about something. All I can remember is the phrase he was using, the importation of Irish beef. And he was banging the table, and I was 14 or something like that. And I'd never seen, you know, passions and volume like that before. But what we've seen lately from MPs of all political hues, some of the language that we've seen, I don't know how the system ever recovers from that, Kyle. I don't know.
No, it's perhaps it is broken beyond repair.
We have to have some hope for it, though. And just very quickly, in Rochdale, in Lancashire, what the people that you see every day, the people, you know, in Sainsbury's or wherever, what are they saying about all of this? What do they think?
Amazingly, I was sat in a pub the day after the referendum, and I'm amazed how they all sat there and said, we all voted for it. And Rochdale is a very big leaving town, and I am still amazed to this day. But I think a lot of it, and it was based on, I think Mr. Cummings played a very clever game with the people he was aligned with, and it was about the immigration, and that's what all people cared about. And I think that what I was trying to say is, I think if people had been presented, I know they're counter arguments, if people have been presented with the facts, like, you will lose your European health insurance card, you will lose this, you will lose this money, you know, that
would you put yourself on the Brexit spectrum now, then, at this moment, having been through all the last 2.5 years, where do you, if there was to be a second referendum, which there probably won't, but who knows, how would you vote?
I'll still vote Remain, absolutely, back down.
Kyle, thank you for that. Next time we talk, we'll be talking about radio and fun and other stuff, but I think tonight it's just, as the Eagles once sang, it's one of those nights. Kyle, thank you.
Brilliant,
thank you. Very much. Here I am quoting song titles, beginning of the show, quoting John Lennon, who also said, strange days indeed. As you might know, if you listen to stuff that I do regularly, I'm from Liverpool, and John Lennon is my hero. If John Lennon was running the country, we'd have no problems. This is Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. Our number here, 0344-499-1000.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
A little while ago here, we spoke with Femi Oluwole, who is a campaigner, long-term campaigner for a second referendum representing young people and their views. It's important that I tell you what Craig's had to say on the Twitter. Craig says, I voted out in 2016. I'm a young person. My friends voted out too. So please, Howard, remember that not all young people voted to remain. Craig, point taken. Roger, the fun stuff is coming back very soon, but we need to do this because it's important and it's all our futures here. Even though, as some of you are telling me, it's doing your head in. I can quite understand that. But let's get to somebody who might be able to clear some of the mist, or at least give us a bit of a steer. Martha Gill, leader writer at the Times newspaper on politics and policy. Martha, thank you for staying up to do this momentous day. What's going to happen now that the timetable that Boris Johnson wanted to ramrod through isn't going to happen? It's not going to happen in the way that we thought it was. So what is the roadmap for the next week or two?
Okay, so what's happened is the bill is basically in limbo now. Everything's kind of ground to a halt, but it's not dead, as some MPs put it. Mm. So what Boris Johnson has said that he wants to do now is that he, if the EU try to extend the amount of time it now takes to make Brexit happen beyond the end of January, he says he's going to call an early election. Now, it's my opinion that an election is on its way anyway, because it now looks like this bill isn't going to go through easily. And so in order to get it through, Boris has to get himself a majority. And the only way he can do that is by going to the country. So really, what the next few weeks give, I mean, in the next couple of days, the Queen's speech is going to be debated, and we've got a bit of a timetable set out there, but that's not really the important stuff. Mm. The important stuff is yet unresolved. And I think probably what's going to happen is unless the government can see a way for this bill to get through early, I think given what they have said, what Boris said earlier about pausing it and about an early election, he really is sticking to that deadline that we set out of getting it done by the 31st. So it doesn't look like he's happy to let it roll on a little bit longer. After all, we saw today that there was a big vote in principle for his Brexit deal. People just didn't like the timetable. And so, you know, the question of him giving MPs a little bit longer to scrutinise his bill and then Brexit happening.
So when he stood up earlier in the Commons and effectively said, I'm not going to put up with too much more footling around, he meant it.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, there are different opinions on what he really meant. Somebody, the Spectator pointed out that that he mentioned he didn't want it to go on for months and months. So maybe that means anything less than months, i.e. less than 8 weeks, would be fine. I'm not sure, really, he hasn't put a time limit on it, but we can be sure that he's thinking about that date of October the 31st, which he said he'd die in a ditch rather than not leave by.
I think we all remember that. This idea of a general election is the only way practically to get that through a motion of no confidence?
Yes. Well, there is a way for them to dodge that. So there are sort of three ways. Either other parties call a motion of no confidence in Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson could call a motion, a vote of no confidence in himself. Mm-hmm. Or they could bypass the Fixed Term Parliament Act, which is the act that says you have to call a vote of no confidence, introducing a very short law that calls for an election and just adds on to that, notwithstanding the Fixed Term Parliament Act. But the problem with that is it requires a majority of MPs to support it, which he might get, but then he also needs to clear it, to go through the House of Commons and the House of Lords. So in that process, not MPs can sabotage it.
I can't remember anything like that. Has that ever happened before?
I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that.
But it certainly sounds like something that could be described as unprecedented.
Yes, I think you're probably absolutely right when you say that, yes.
Okay.
It sounds incredibly complicated, doesn't it?
Last question then, Martha. All of us are thinking about this. Looking at it as we look at it tonight, how does this leave our politics?
How does it leave our politics?
How does it leave the procedures of doing the business of governing the country, which is necessarily political?
So do you mean, sorry, just to clarify what you mean there. Where are we letting...
I'm talking about the way that people view MPs, the way that the procedures work. You know, we're a fractured nation. There are those who certainly say that with good reason. Do we have a fractured political system now, and can it recover?
Well, I think we have a system which a lot of people have lost faith in, because what we didn't realise before we went into this process is how much of our politics kind of works on everyone wanting to behave in the right way and wanting to maintain the respect of other MPs and wanting to sort of act in the way that MPs have always acted and abide by unwritten rules. And the problem is now everyone's breaking all those unwritten rules, and we're sort of working out just how unwritten the whole thing is, because all these very unexpected things can happen, and because our constitution is unwritten, and because a lot of these laws are sort of bendable because everyone's relied on good manners and a sense of fair play to get through. It's exposing all the flaws in our system, and it's not easily patch upable. So, yeah, I think that the idea of press, because precedent is so important in the way that our politics works, this precedent, all these precedents everyone's setting now by behaving as most voters might think quite badly, I really think it is going to have quite a profound effect on politics, and I don't think it's going to be very easy to patch it up either.
No, I think it's going to be a long-term thing. I can't wait to see the front page of the Times in the morning. Thank you so much for staying up to do this, Martha Gill, leader writer at the Times, talking around what is going to happen as far as we are aware. This is Howard Hughes on Talk Radio, in for Ian Lee this week. A bit of a different week here. Let's get to Andre Walker, regular broadcaster of this parish, New York Observer columnist and broadcaster, of course, well known on here. So, Andre, what a day, hey? What a day. Are you there?
Hello?
Andre, can you hear me? Testing 1, 2, 3. I don't think you can hear me. Andre Walker, it's your long-lost cousin Howard here. I've been very concerned about you. Andre, can you hear me? Oh, no, I think we've lost him. Oh, well, we'll get to Andre Walker as soon as we can. Still time to hear from you about this, and a reminder that we're going to get back to normal format here, and we're going to be talking about life, the world, and everything, just to give ourselves a bit of a break, really. Shane in Sydney, one of my regular Unexplained listeners, it's, about 10 o'clock in the morning there, isn't it? I wonder, Shane, maybe you can send me a tweet, or if you want to give us a call, we'll call you back in Sydney. When you're watching all this stuff in Australia, what do you think about it, Shane? Let me know. Andre Walker, broadcaster of this parish, political commentator, and my pal is online to us now. Sorry we lost you there, Andre. What do you make of what's going on here?
Well, I think it's a last-ditch attempt by the pro-Europeans to stay in the EU. Obviously, one of the things that I think is starting to dawn on people is you can't rule without consent. And I think after, 3.5 years, the attempt to keep us in the EU, I think, is gradually starting to die. I feel quite sorry for the Northern Irish, but in reality, they do have an ability to get out of the trading arrangements with the EU, but they just require a simple majority, which couldn't be vetoed by either the unionist side or the nationalist side. And fundamentally, that means in practice, they won't leave those arrangements. But that is because they will not satisfy the democratic process and do it.
But fundamentally, the deal that Boris has come up with has a proviso in it, as you rightly say, for the people of Northern Ireland to have a say on it down the track.
Yes, that's right. So essentially, the bone of contention is this, and it's a little bit geeky, but there's something called a petition of concern in the Stormont Assembly, which is unbelievably powerful, and people forget that. And so essentially what happens is, if 30 members of the Assembly sign a petition of concern, then for legislation to go through, you need not just a majority of the members, but a majority of the members that designate themselves as unionist, and a majority that designate themselves as nationalists. Now, of course, if you require a simple majority to leave the EU arrangements, what you know is that the nationalists will never, ever vote to put a partition between them and Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. And obviously, had you had the petition of concern in place, the DUP would have been able to pull Ireland, Northern Ireland, out of those arrangements kind of on its own. Look, my point of view on it, and I know it's a deeply controversial, is that if you are able to leave those arrangements by a simple majority in your parliament, i.e. Stormont, then, you know, the fact that you're never going to do that, it isn't really my problem, if you see what I mean. You've been given the right.
But so the provision is there, and that's going to make some people feel comfortable. Maybe.
Yeah, so if a majority of members of the Legislative Assembly want to leave that arrangement in the future, they will be able to do that. Now, as I say, the concern is that it is not believed likely that would ever happen. But they do have that power to do it, should they wish to.
And the Northern Ireland issue and the backstop before it, all of this is crucial to this. Just taking an overview, though, of this day and the events Saturday in particular, but the events that led up to this day. How do you think, if we're going to get Brexit, how do you think that is going to unfold? The smart money seems to be saying tonight it's going to be a general election, possibly brought about by some use of an arcane procedure that gets a vote of no confidence in the government brought in somehow by using procedures that aren't used very much or maybe haven't been used before. But, you know, that's what we're saying. But it's a difficult and interesting path to Brexit, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think Oliver Letwin is somebody who really is, you know, ought to be ashamed of himself. Because remember, he's the person that brought in this disastrous Fixed-Term Parliament Act, which has created the kind of zombie government that we have at the moment, which is a government that's basically unable to govern, but unable to call a general election either. The reason Letwin brought in the Fixed-Term Parliament Act was because Nick Clegg wanted some assurances that he wouldn't be dumped out of the coalition. Mm. Now, the idea that you make constitutional law just to help Nick Clegg is crazy. And then, of course, we fast forward to Oliver Letwin now demanding extensions and forcing people to you know, sign letters with the Benn Act and all this sort of thing. Look, fundamentally, here's where we are. We know that the establishment are outraged that Britain voted to leave the European Union. We know that we gave them the wrong result. That referendum was intended for us to confirm that we were as secretly pro-European as the establishment is. That's not what happened. Now what's happened is, you know, 3 years later, the establishment has been kicking and screaming and fighting all the way. It will fight us. It will fight the British people right down to the wire. But we are at the end of the game here now. Boris Johnson's deal is a bad deal, but it's not a catastrophic deal. And I would categorise the difference between bad and catastrophic is that it doesn't have the permanence that Theresa May's deal had. Obviously, with the backstop, the European Union would be allowed to keep us under their regulations for as long as they wanted. Under this arrangement, they won't. And if you are concerned about why we got a bad deal, always remember, you know, politicians from right across the divide, whether that be, you know, people like Keir Starmer or Oliver Letwin, have been in collusion with the Europeans in order to wreck the British negotiating position. We saw time and time again. In fact, this week, I think it was last week, Joe Swinson had a private meeting with Guy Verhofstadt. The new president of the European Commission has been talking about his private meeting with John Bercow, all to discuss quote-unquote Brexit or quote-unquote the deal. Well, of course, what we're discussing is how to prevent Brexit most effectively, and that has meant that British negotiators have not had a chance. And what they've come back with is a truly awful deal, but it is without question, because of what people like Hilary Benn have done, it is with the best deal we're going to get, and I think it will pass on that basis.
And what is your view, just briefly, Andre, about the role of Mr. Speaker over these weeks and months?
Well, I mean, I don't know what to say about John Bercow, because he's clearly a brilliant man who has disgraced himself. You know, he's given up on any pretense of neutrality. You know, at one point he was actually lobbying to replace Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. You know, to do that from the Speaker's chair is genuinely shameful. I think there needs to be a couple of changes in Parliament. I think, first of all, we need to get rid of this Fixed-Term Parliament Act. The idea that a government can exist with no power is crazy. I think also we need to enact a Logan Act, which makes it a criminal offence for British nationals to negotiate with foreign powers behind the British government's back.
Wow.
That's a law that
exists. Do you think that's
America.
Likely to happen?
Well, certainly Conservative MPs are arguing strongly for it. It's something that exists in America. In America, believe it or not, had people like Keir Starmer and John Bercow and Joe Swinson and Jeremy Corbyn would now be facing criminal prosecution and imprisonment for going to Michel Barnier without Ollie Robbins' presence and without without the British negotiators.
And of course, there are those who would say that that's perfectly permissible in a democracy.
Well. But the purpose of it was, well, anything's permissible in a democracy until it's illegal. But the argument goes that there has been a deliberate attempt to undermine the British negotiating position so that we get the worst deal possible. Now, I am not suggesting for one second that the reason that Keir Starmer has made the deal, has deliberately tried to undermine the deal, is because he wants us to have a bad deal. What he wants is for the deal to be so bad that Britain never agrees to it, so we remain in the European Union. Nonetheless, that has been hugely toxic. And I suppose the third reform, I think, is of the speakership itself. The ability of the Speaker to tear up the British Constitution and alter the rules whenever it's suiting the side he favoured has been a nightmare. I mean, I genuinely believe that there is a bigger issue than Brexit here. You know, the British Constitution has fallen to bits. The British establishment has fallen to bits. Our trust in institutions has died. I mean, remember, there are now huge numbers of people who want to abolish the Supreme Court. There are a huge number of people who want to abolish the Electoral Commission.
And there are huge numbers of people who just don't want to vote anymore.
That's right. 62% of Leave voters do not trust their MPs to do anything, not even run a bath successfully. Now, when you have that level of toxicity, and when the British institutions have been so badly discredited, what you've got to recognise is the problem now is not Brexit. The problem is rebuilding confidence in British institutions, which has been shot to pieces.
Very quickly, otherwise my producer will hang me. When we come out of this, which one day we will, and hopefully you and I are still alive by that point, do you think we'll ever be the same again as a country, as a nation?
I genuinely think it'll be one of those things that will be forgotten. I mean, you know, you go back through history and there's these huge arguments about, you know, whether slavery should be abolished or whether we should, you know, decolonise, or, you know, whether Scotland and England should form into the United Kingdom. And, you know, quite often it all seems very toxic at the time and all very terrible at the time, but things will move on. No, look, the other point to make is, I think Ireland is not long for its membership of the European Union. The European Union itself is in critical trouble. It's in desperate need of reform that will never come. The euro is tanking. The next recession could wipe it out. I just don't think this is going to be a big issue in 50 years.
Oh, big matters we're talking about. Andre, nice to speak with you. Interesting times we live in. Andre Walker, talk radio broadcaster, New York Observer columnist, with his overview of this. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't he? Right. Brexit, not entirely done. If you want to chip in about that, that's fine. But we're going to go back to what we normally do after this, and we're going to take a big sigh of relief, maybe, some of us. One or two of you say, what are you doing this for? Others, incensed about the events in Parliament today. You pays your money, you takes your choice. But we're going to get back to regular programming coming next. Hayley Hayes, my producer, and indeed she who must be obeyed, will be joining me after these commercials. This is Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
In the nighttime, we are Talk Radio. We have emerged from a political vortex, a black hole. A spinning police box suddenly tumbles into the studio and out emerges another version of Howard Hughes, recreated. I am the Doctor, but different. Pretty much we're done with the politics. Hayley Hayes has appeared here as Doctor Who's assistant tonight. So we're going to go back to business as usual. And roadmap for the next hour and a bit is that we're going to take open lines, calls straight to air. So you call and we put you on. That's how it's going to work. And if you want to talk about anything, we may suggest a few things to you. But I'd rather that you suggested a few things to us, because it would probably work better that way. Two quick things to say about politics. Shane in Sydney, Australia, thank you for your good wishes to all of us. Says, Howard, I'm not good with politics. Geez, neither am I, Shane, now. But I think the UK doesn't need the EU. It can stand on its own. This is the view from Australia. On its own two feet. We're thousands of miles from major countries, and we survive all right, says Shane in Sydney. Thank you, Shane. John says, if, in your own words, John Lennon were Prime Minister of this country, would you be prepared to treat listeners to a love-in in protest between yourself and Hayley Hayes, providing she doesn't give you the evil eye?
Well, she does.
Given, really,
she only
it?
Really does that if I'm doing something wrong. You know, if I'm not, if I'm not toeing the line, that's when those things happen. So look, total change of whatever. Thank you very much for all of your views. It shows that even if you're kind of normally listening to Ian and doing that stuff, you have an opinion, and you know we are the place to air that opinion, and you have a right to it. And the politicians need to hear what you have to say, because there are millions of people who've had it. You know, I once said on this show, that movie network where the TV newscaster goes mad and the network is going to take him off air because he goes nuts. But he says, I want you to go to the window and shout out of the window, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. It becomes a phenomenon in the movie. People across America are shouting, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I would respectfully put to you that maybe we are in a situation now where maybe we need to start doing that. So maybe these people in Westminster start hearing us and our frustration at 2.5 years of anxiety. Alan Caddick in Birmingham.
Hi, Alan.
Nice to hear your voice, Alan. My God, you saved me tonight.
Let me just start the night with this.
An exciting new season begins on ITV, and TV Times highlights programs that started off. War and Remembrance is the sequel to Winds of War, and we meet Hollywood giant Robert Mitchum on location. Two contrasting crime fighters are back. Don't miss Simon Dutton as the Saint, or Taggart, the Tough plus Wheaton Cop. Be in on the final stages of the Tour of Britain, and 50 readers can each win four Zara Rhodes outfits. The new ITV season this week in TV Times.
Alan, you've excelled yourself. Can I have a guess at the year before you tell me?
Yeah.
Remember Simon Bates used to say, Butch and Sincere, but what was the year, lovey?
What was the year?
I think the year was, let me guess, Taggart was on probably 1989.
Yeah, because the first picture was the new ITV logo.
Ah, yes, with the new ITV theme, wasn't it? You know, da-da-da-da-da.
Written by David Dundas.
Switch on to ITV.
No, get ready for ITV.
Get ready for... if you go on YouTube, and I bet you found this, Alan, the backing track to that great tune is there. Now, unfortunately, many people would say that that was the beginning of the end for ITV, because that's where all the wonderful regional companies, like... tonight I'm wearing an HTV T-shirt, which is...
Which one, HTV Wales or HTV West?
I was an HTV Wales man myself, because I was in Liverpool. But the HTV West was, of course, across the water. They've abolished all that now. It was across the water in the West Country. And literally, if you want to know real anorak facts about the way ITV used to operate, we'll tell you very quickly. In the old days of HTV, covering Wales and the west of England, they would have twin announcers booths, InVision announcers. And in one of the booths, there'd be the guy speaking to the West Country. They were both in Cardiff. And in the other booth, where there would be the Welsh announcer for Wales.
Arvon Haynes-Davis.
Arvon Haynes-Davis. You know that there are our listeners in Wales, and outside of Wales, Arvon Haynes-Davis is completely unknown. I grew up with him, and you know who Arvon Haynes-Davis was. Mr. TV announcer on HTV.
Because when they had the ITV telephone in 1990,
he was the
technical
local
difficulties with Nerys Hughes.
They had technical problems with Nerys Hughes, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds a bit
uncomfortable. I wonder if Nerys was related to you, Howard.
Now, you know, all wonderful stuff, and then there was ATV in the Midlands and Central.
Yeah, when Central came about, because it was actually ATV, but under a new name.
With what, a man I came to know later, I'm sorry this is so anoraki, but this man again is known over a huge swathe of England, a wonderful TV announcer called Mike Prince.
Mike Prince. He was Mr. ATV and Mr. Central, wasn't he?
You know, when I was a kid, my great ambition, you know, was to be one of those InVision. In Granada Land, in the Northwest, for many years, they didn't have announcers that you could see. They only had a caption.
John Foster.
Oh, God, he knows them all. But they, in the old days, when I was a child, which is why I used to watch HTV, where you could see the announcers, on Granada, it was very doer. And they just used to have a caption, like the one at the end of Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And the announcer would say, this is Granada. And that's it. And it was very, very boring, I thought. So I used to watch other regions. Listen, if you're not into all of this, this is what ITV used to be.
Yorkshire Television with Red vs Kyle.
Red vs Kyle. Now, if you live in Yorkshire, or indeed a large part of the northeast where Yorkshire Television used to get up to, they had a guy with a fantastic voice, who retired, I think, in about the year 2002, 2003, called Red vs. Kyle, South African man, with just that he was the voice of Yorkshire Television.
He was Mr. Yorkshire.
He was. How do you know all this, Alan Caddick, in Birmingham?
Photographic memory.
I mean,
another thing, you name me a place in the country, and I can tell you the ITV region.
Okay. Well, you, obviously, I'm not going to say Norwich.
But Anglia.
And who was the... All right, we're going to have to stop this, because there are some people are going to say, what the hell is this? Who was the chief announcer at Anglia?
Well, you had so many. You had Paul Lavers, Michael Speak.
Now, who was the man who was the big star?
That was Michael Speak.
Not John Benson?
No, he did the announcing on the programmes. In the program.
Ah, but he was also an InVision continuity announcer, John Benson. He was, and John Benson is the man who used to say at the beginning of Sale of the Century, and now, from Norwich, it's the quiz of the week.
And in 1987, 88, he did the voiceover for 3-2-1, back in Yorkshire.
And he was also, when Jonathan Ross used to do his show on Channel 4 in the 80s, John Benson.
The Last Resort.
John Benson was the guy who appeared in a dinner jacket every week as Jonathan Ross's announcer.
And also, do you remember TVS down in the South with Malcolm Brown?
I know Malcolm. Malcolm's a friend. In fact, I and my girlfriend at the time, we had dinner with Malcolm Brown. And Malcolm Brown's a lovely... Malcolm Brown, if you're listening, I miss you. You lovely man. Absolutely lovely man who was once on Granada Television. All these announcers used to travel around the country. That's why it was fun then.
They were all freelance, weren't they?
Yeah, they were all freelance. Some of them would work in two regions, like some of the guys on Thames in London would go and do Bristol at the weekend. Tom Edwards would do London during the week, and then he'd get on the train on Friday night when Thames would close down for London Weekend to come on, and he'd get on the train, go to Bristol, and he would be on HTV West. This is too much anarchy, though, for our listener.
Talking about LWT, the granddaddy of them all, Peter Lewis.
Oh, Peter Lewis. His father was Bruce Lewis, who was an announcer in the West Country. Alan Caddick, I think we're going to have to park it there.
No, but we'll listen. Stay on tomorrow night.
Thank you very much. I'll speak to you tomorrow, but thank you very much for the most anarchic... Hayley, you're looking disgusting.
I don't know how to contribute to that conversation. I feel like I'm not part of it.
Well, you know, some of my listeners, and tonight I'm wearing an HTV West Ham Wales T-shirt, will remember the glory days of ITV when there were regions, when it was... Before it was just one ITV with one announcer saying, oh, then tonight on Coronation Street it's going to be a really exciting finale. It was better in those days, really. I don't know. All right, it's open lines, 0344-499-1000. What does that mean? It means you call, we put you on the air, like we're going to do with Rena in Scotland. Hello, Rena.
Hello, good evening.
Hello.
I was just wanting to ask you a couple of questions.
Can I just say, I like your voice, Rena. It's very, very good. Are you an actress?
No, dear, I'm not.
It's very good. Sorry, questions. You got questions?
Sorry?
You got questions, I got answers.
Right. You know how you talk about, I wouldn't say paranormal, but strange things that can happen.
All the time.
To you. Mm-hmm. My mother died, it's got to be 45 years ago, and I woke up startled this night. I thought, what the hell was that? Excuse me. And I looked at my bedroom door. I sleep with my bedroom door shut. But my bedroom door was open, and my mother was standing there with her glasses, a little blue blouse that she used to wear, with a blue cardigan.
And did she just speak?
There, and I put my hand out, and when I put my hand out, she just disappeared.
Oh, boy. And what do you think that was all about? Was she wanting to reassure you, Rena?
I don't know. Excuse me.
Sorry.
Another night, I was in bed again, and my father was... he was quite a well-known man in the city of Glasgow. And this sounds terrible, but he didn't care about the way he looked dress-wise. You know, he used to wear...
I can relate to that.
He used to wear a trench coat with three buttons, and one would be out of sync, do you know what I mean? Do you?
So he wore a trench coat with three buttons, I got that bit.
Yeah, but the one was, you know, instead of buttoning at one, two and three, he would button at one and three kind of thing.
Oh, no, I do
one
that.
One and two. That kind of idiosyncrasy. So I woke up again this night. My bedroom curtains are always open, summer and winter. He wears glasses. He used to wear this awful scarf. And he was standing there.
So you had visits from both your mother who passed and your father?
My father passed first at 66. And my mother died a few years later at 44.
And do you believe it was them, or do you think it might be something that, you know, and we all do this, that your mind might have created, because obviously you're going to miss them?
Well, yes, but I mean, they've been dead a long time. Mm-hmm.
And did they only come the once?
Only the once. Dad was at the window, and Mum was at the bedroom door.
And what did you take away from that then, Rena? Did you feel that, you know, they wanted to come back because obviously they love you, and the love of those people who are into this will tell you that the love link is eternal. It goes on and on and on. It's like Titanic song.
That.
Goes on and on.
What I felt personally was reassured. I don't know, because I'm non-religious. I don't know, I've got a kind of comfort from it, but at the same time, I was a little bit scared.
Are you in Edinburgh?
No, I'm in a place called Glenrothes in Kirkcaldy, but I'm from Glasgow.
Okay, no, I was just going to say, Edinburgh is the most haunted city in the country, I think. I'm sorry, it's just a little factoid there. There was no need for that, but I just had this feeling you were in Edinburgh. It just goes to show how psychic I am, doesn't it, really? Now, having had that experience, Rena, very important, and very quickly, do you feel differently? You know, we're all going to meet our maker, assuming that we do, or indeed going to the fiery pits, as some people may say, in my case. Do you feel differently about your own, you know, departure after that?
Well, I'm 84.
Mm-hmm. You don't sound it. You sound... I'd have said you were 50. Maybe 45.
Thank you very much. And obviously time's marching on. But I don't... my husband died last year.
I'm sorry.
And I didn't... We had no hymns. No flowers, except from... I've got 5 children. 1 red from me and 5 white roses from the children. No hymns, no nothing. But a beautiful service. And the way I felt about Andy's death is the same way I felt when I saw my mother and father. And I just thought to myself, when I've been listening to your program, I wonder if you had any answers, that's all.
Well, answers, I don't know, but we talk it round a lot, and, you know, on future editions of the show, I will talk about my experiences with that, because, you know, I'm with you on many of those things. But, Rena, please take care. I'm sorry about your husband, and I'm glad that you got the 5 kids to give you comfort in all of that. Rena, in Glenrothes, if you want to call us, we're going to take calls straight to air. Open lines here, 0344-499-1000. This radio station is called Talk Radio.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's News
on Talk Radio.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Clap along if you feel like that's what you want.
Pharrell, thank you for that. Pharrell Williams, which will always remind me of being up to my proverbials in mud. Because when that song was a hit, it was the winter of, I think, 2014, beginning of the year. And I was working in Berkshire, which is long behind me now, but doing some work out there and having to broadcast live from flooding in a place called Raysbury, which is near Windsor, which is on the border of the M25 and Windsor. If you're listening in Raysbury... great people there, and they suffered so much during those floods, and I hope you're all right now. But that was the song that was on the radio station that I was manacled to at the time, that was playing all the time. So whenever I hear Pharrell Williams, and I'll remember being up to my knees in mud. And at one point, the chief engineer of the radio station whose name may be Martin. Martin was bringing all the equipment along, and we put him in a boat because everywhere was so flooded. And Martin sat with the equipment in the boat while I had a rope on the front and pulled him through the water. And he looked like the emperor of, you know, the emperor of Bangalore or something, like some great royal character being dragged through the water by me. I'll have you know that my shoulders still hurt after that. Just a couple of tweets to get to. Then the plan for the next hour, then Daryl Morris will be here after 1 o'clock, is we're going to take calls straight to air. So slightly different. You call, we stick you on. 0344 499 1000. There are some things that we might talk about. I'll float those past you if we need to. But I'd rather that you told me what to think and say to like, because it works better. Sit, Stand, Walk sent a text saying that the person who made the most sense on the air tonight, you'll get no disagreement from me. It was Alan Caddick. We love Alan. Trevor says, we were talking with Alan about ITV and the way that it had all these regions like Central. You're watching Central in the Midlands and ATV as it was before that. Mike Prince was the star announcer, and Trevor, like me, remembers him in the 70s and the 80s. I met him once, and he was such a lovely, lovely man to talk with. And I thought, you're Mike Prince off the telly. And Bob Warman, who I think is still presenting the ITV regional news in Birmingham, who's been doing it for about 40 years now. Met Bob as well. He's another nice man. And Sally also says that Alan Caddick was making the most sense tonight. So I think we have a consensus. If we were talking politics here, which we're not anymore, we have a bit of a consensus here. It's Howard Hughes and Hayley Hayes, and I'm not letting poor Hayley get a word in edgeways. You want to say anything, Hayley? Just hello would do.
I'm all good. Hello.
Okay. Are you happy?
Thank you. I'm very happy, especially after hearing that.
Amy, who's doing the tech-hopping, technical production tonight, as we call it. See, I upgrade everybody.
Technical director, I think you're fine.
Yes, chief facilitator of technical operations.
It's getting better every second.
CFTP. So Amy is the CFTP tonight. Is going to find us a version that was done of Pharrell Williams' song that's about dogs. It's called Yappy, and it's great, and nobody plays it. So we'll do that at some point, because I know Amy is like a bloodhound with these things.
There's a promise.
And she'll find it. Well spotted. Nigel in Maidstone. How are you, Nigel? I hope good.
Oh, hello, Howard. Hello, Hayley.
Hi.
Hello. We're taking calls straight to air, so we just stuck you right on.
Yes. I'm rather tired this evening. Oh. Since I had my accident, keep falling asleep.
Do you?
Well, you need the sleep.
Listen, you need the sleep for your recovery. It's very important.
Yes, I think the pain makes you tired, because I'm in pain most of the day.
Mm. You've got to hear time. Listen, as my grandmother, who I quote on this show quite a lot, used to say in Liverpool, Howard, she'd say, apart from the thing, well, there was something she'd say I can't repeat. I mean, a woman who was so demure, she could have a potty mouth sometimes, you know, the things that she would say. And some of my Liverpool friends will know those sorts of things. She used to say how time is a great healer. And it is.
Yes.
And that you will find.
The pain is quite a bit better than it was over 2 weeks. So in another week, it should be quite a bit better still.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, Nigel.
I have been having trouble even making the bed, reaching over to make a bed. It's very difficult.
Is anybody helping you?
No, I'm all on my own, so I've happened to do my cooking, the washing, everything. No wonder I'm tired, because I have to do everything myself.
But you're just going to have to put yourself in the hands of healing, of your body. But you're still cycling with it, aren't you? You cracked your ribs,
but
I know.
I have to get to shops, and it's the only form of transport. Mm. I said, happy birthday to my mum. It was my mum's birthday yesterday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to your mum.
I just missed it by a little bit.
I know she's very sorely missed. Are you still doing the singing? Because the last few times you haven't done the singing.
I'm in a minute.
Oh, yeah, are you? Yeah. You can do a song. Okay. Well, why don't you get around to doing the song for us? Because we need, to tell you the truth, we need a bit of an uplift.
Okay, is it? Can you hear me clear?
Well, yes, I can hear you very clearly. But we need a bit of, after all that politics, you know, Nigel, we need a bit of an uplift.
Yes.
And to tell you the truth, when I saw Nigel in Maidstone, I thought it was the other Nigel. I thought it was Farage calling.
Nigel Farage. sometimes I do Frank Spencer when I'm on holiday.
Do you?
On the stage.
And go on, give us a Frank Spencer there. We need a bit of that.
Hello, Biddy. Biddy, I did a bit of trouble. My kid done a whoopsie on the carpet. Oh, Biddy. Tiny beans. Oh.
Everybody who used to do that always used to do the whoopsie thing. Didn't they?
Oh, I used
Betty,
to do that.
I've got a bit of bother. The cat's done a whoopsie in my beret. it's a bit of a dated reference for many of our listeners there, Nigel. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
A lot of people won't remember him because they'd be younger people remember Frank Spencer.
Well, don't forget, of course, Michael Crawford made his name really later as Phantom of the Opera.
That's a long time afterwards, though.
Oh, it's many years after. Well, after he did that great comedy scene. What's that?
TV, as you were talking about, television.
Oh, yes.
Earlier. And, of course, I met Kylie Minogue when she was 21 at CBS in Maidstone.
Did you? Yeah, they used to have... In fact, they made the Jeremy Kyle show, I think, in Maidstone as well. Big TV studios there.
All Clued Up. I met David Hamilton when my dad was ill, and we went to see All Clued Up in the audience, and I went backstage with David Hamilton.
David's a great man. David says, hello, David Hamilton here.
Yeah.
Great guy. Like David
have
very
you
much.
Met him?
I used to work with him. I was on a radio station that used to be called, doesn't exist anymore, Capital FM, and David Hamilton, hello, David Hamilton here, was on Capital Gold, another station that doesn't exist anymore.
I went into the dressing room with him. He allowed me into the dressing room.
Okay.
And he took his shirt, he took his clothes off in front of me.
No, well, he was probably in the middle of a big change, Nigel. Don't worry about that. You know, performers have to do these things very quickly.
Yes, they do, before they go back
home. Exactly. Now, about the song, then, Nigel.
Yes, this is called I Miss You. It's the one I did for my mum's funeral at the time.
Okay.
I'll far away. I miss you, I miss your smile, though I may shed a tear every once in a while. And even though it's different now, you're still here somehow. Now I won't let you go, I need you to know.
Was that it? Oh, we've lost the line, I think.
Oh, that's a shame.
Well, I mean, thank God it was at the end of a verse. Could have been much worse, couldn't it? It could have been midway.
It was lovely for what it was.
Yeah. I mean, had it been
short
the Copacabana. No, if it had been the Copacabana, it could have been at the Co. And that would have been it, wouldn't it? At the Co. And we'd have to think of the rest of it. You know? We'd have to kind of make it up for ourselves. The hottest spot north of Havana, I think you'll find. Now, I know it's a little bit of a challenge tonight because we had a couple of hours of straight, hard, hitting between the ears politics. But we've, you know, to show that we're versatile here. I started as a newsman, okay, so I was sort of going back to my roots there. But I'm breathing a big sigh of relief now, you know, the muscles are relaxing a bit. So the plan is that we need to speak with you. If you're listening to this right now, you want to give us a call, talk about anything, 0344-499-1000, it is open lines tonight. What does that mean? What does that connote, Howard? I'm glad you asked. We take your call and we stick it right on the air. So there's no waiting. It's not like Brexit. There's no dithering and hanging about. We put you straight on the radio. Aren't I right, Hayley? You
yes,
do more of this than I do.
Right.
Well, you're very
I'm
right.
Always right.
Well, you're
generally.
So right. You're so right, you're never wrong, I'd say. Things that we might talk about. Not that you want time. It's sort of going into Terry Wogan now. The old talk radio.
You got told off for being Partridge last night.
I know I did. I can be them all, you know. Chris Terrett, a little bit of it. A little bit of Roger Moore down here, you know, which is like, hello, talk radio here. That's not very good. Maybe things you might want to talk about. We've seen MPs spend a couple of years debating Brexit, haven't we? And by the looks of it, they're going to spend a couple of years more. And there are those who say, and I can understand why they might say it, that it's a monumental waste of time.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you see, Hayley thinks so. And I'm beginning to be of that view myself, I have to say. You know, I'm rapidly losing the will to live. So, we don't want to talk about that specifically. But what about in your life? Have you spent a vast amount of time, maybe years, doing something, and then you thought at the end of it all, what did I do that for? What a waste of time.
I did that with the piano. I spent a lot of years.
You made a piano?
No, playing the piano. Sorry if that didn't come across. I spent years playing the piano, did all my grades, even thought about being a teacher at one point because I thought, oh, that would be quite, you know, good way to.
Did you get beyond chopsticks?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, and then I got to the point of actually, I don't think I enjoy this. Yeah, it just didn't give me as much. And I think I stressed myself out by doing all the exams.
Really? So what kind of level did you get to then?
Well, I did all my
Elton
exams.
John level?
No, gosh, no, I wish. I'm not like a natural. I can't play by ear or anything. But no, I kind of stressed myself out. I think what I did was I stressed myself out trying to be too good, doing all my exams, putting myself under pressure, and then actually thinking, oh, I'm not, the fun's come out of it. Have you ever done that, where you've tried to make something that should be a hobby and fun and tried to make it into something, you know, oh, I can make a living out of this, or I can make some money out of this?
Yeah, I did that with radio.
Well, no. But it saps all the fun out of it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, no. Listen, we said, I want to talk about your piano playing a bit more, though, because I've got a couple of very, very specific questions. Don't look so shocked. We said we're going to take calls straight to air, 0344-499-1000. Margaret, in a place of my acquaintance, Reading in Berkshire. How are you, Margaret?
Oh, hello. I don't know your name.
It's Howard.
Howard. Only I've just had a rough night, and so...
I'm sorry, Margaret. What's going on? What's going on?
I don't know. I heard you talking about people who'd seen their parents, etc., who'd died.
Yes.
And so my experience was, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in afterlife or anything like that. And then my mum died,
mm-hmm.
and then I saw her. She was sitting in her chair, and she said to me, oh, I went up to her. And I said, well, how lovely to see you. And she was not a demonstrative person. And she said, all right, we don't want any of that. Very, very definite. And so...
And is that the way that she was in life, though? Was she that direct in life?
Yes.
Ooh,
yes, and her, exactly like she would have been, you know, don't let's have any of that fuss. And then she said to me that one of my relatives was thinking of doing something really, really, really terrible.
Mm.
This was at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so...
So, hang on, your mother came back to you and tipped you off about something bad that was going to happen?
To one of my relatives.
Oh, Lord. What did you do?
Yeah. And then she said, I've got to go. This is really difficult. And so I phoned up my relative. I won't say who it was.
Mm-hmm.
At 6 o'clock in the morning, and you do not do that. And I said, are you thinking of... killing yourself? And they said, no, we're fine.
Okay.
And a week later, they did.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry about that. There was nothing that you could have done about that. It's terrible.
No, there was nothing. It was just that, and then my brother said to me, who also doesn't believe in afterlife or God or anything, what do you think about afterlife now?
Mm. And what did you say?
I don't know. I mean, it could have been telepathy from the person who was in mental agony. I just don't know.
But you saw your mum, and you said you saw her clearly.
Absolutely clearly.
True.
Sitting in a chair,
mm-hmm.
and being my mum. Oh no, we don't want any of that fuss. Yeah, it was amazing. And so, what do I think about afterlife after that? Well. I don't know. Anyway, I thought you might like to know about that.
Yeah, well, right. Absolutely. Whereabouts, by the way, as a man who loves Reading pretty damn well, I used to drive there every week for work. Whereabouts in Reading are you? I know Reading, like the back of my hand.
Very near Caversham Bridge.
Are you? Oh, I used to work in Caversham. What a great place that is. I used to work not far from Budgeons.
I'm near the river, so it is great.
You're very close to Sonning.
Yeah, not far.
Yeah,
not far at all, yeah.
Who was the most famous person who used to live in Sonning?
I don't know who.
Eben Spoons.
You.
I couldn't afford to live. I used to aspire to it. Eben Spoons, there's a clue. He's a spoon bender.
Oh, Uri Geller.
Uri Geller. Uri Geller used to live in this massive mansion in Sonning right by the river. I've never seen a place so luxurious or so large. Margaret, listen, please take care. Nice to hear from Reading and have a good night. Let's get right now to Lavinia in Bermondsey in southeast London. Hello, Lavinia. How are you?
Oh, hi. How are you, Howard?
I'm very good. Nice to hear from you.
Lovely.
Listen, last time we spoke a week ago, you were sharing with us the story of how you had a contact with aliens in Bermondsey.
Yeah. But it happens all the time. When I say it happens,
not with just that experience. What I was trying to say to you earlier on, I also get sort of premonitions, and also like everything like goes in. Slow motion.
I thought you were going to say everything goes in one ear and goes out the other, but sorry.
Well, I wish it would sometimes, but I mean, it doesn't happen. It actually doesn't happen like that, Howard. It just goes into my body, right? And it just makes me feel that there's something is sort of about to happen. And I've had premonitions about my friends in the past. Honestly.
What? I mean, you know, within reason, what sorts of things have you told them?
Well, one day, I had a friend, okay, who actually had an argument with his friend, with his girlfriend at the time, and he asked if I could put him up, you know, for, you know, like a week, actually, to give him sort of like some sort of space to clear his head, okay? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he was going out to this particular evening, and I had this overwhelming feeling, Howard, that if he goes out, he is not going to come back.
Oh, my God. Please don't tell me that happened.
No, honestly. No, honestly. And I'll tell you what happened. Honestly, it really, really freaked me out. And this was about 25 years ago, actually. This was one of my best friends, okay, who I really trusted and who was absolutely... really, what's the word, actually, sincere. He was very sincere, right? Anyway, I actually said to him, because he was going out with these people, and I said, look, please do not go out. And I'll tell you what month it was, August, around about August. And he said...
Did you tell him why? Hang on, Lavinia, did you tell him why you were telling him that?
Yeah, because he said to me, why are you saying to me... not going out. He wanted to go out because it was the weekend, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say, if somebody said to me, I've had a premonition that if you go out, you won't come back, I'm afraid I would just lock myself in the toilet. I wouldn't be going anywhere.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, Howard. I'll tell you what happened to him. He ended up on a life support machine, and he was mugged.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he had head injuries. Honestly, no, you know, this is true. He ended up in... Lewisham Hospital for 1 year, you know, because he was brain dead. And in the end, they had to switch the machine off and he died.
When was this, Lavinia? When was this?
This was about 25 years ago, honestly, Howard. And also, you know, because it freaked me out. It really, really affected me. And also, you know, I'll tell you another experience. This happened about 25, 30 years ago. I was going out with a girlfriend, you know, in the evening, you know, just going out, just sort of going out for the evening, you know, like in a wine bar. Anyway, we was about to walk in the door, and as we walked in the door, it was absolutely packed. But when I would say it was packed, everybody was like, seemed happy at the time, okay? And all I saw, everything at that split the second went in slow motion. Everything.
Yeah, you said that
and
happened.
And I said to her, yeah, and I actually said to her, quick, we need to get out of here. And she said, why? She said, I want to get a drink at the bar. I said, no, get out now. And I dragged her out the wine bar as... we went up the road because she was arguing with me, saying, why are you doing this? You know,
please don't tell me that a bus went through the front of the pub. I've got a feeling that's where this is going.
No.
Sorry, okay.
The windows went in. Uh-huh. The windows went in. The windows just blew out. And apparently somebody got attacked in there. And apparently they got, they were stabbed.
Oh, my God.
Right? And as we were
God, you go to some rough old places, don't you?
Well, no. I mean, it wasn't rough, actually. Apparently, I mean, it just opened up.
Okay.
And it was their first night. And all at right, the time, I don't even drink, Howard.
So, Lavinia, listen, this is, I don't know whether what you have then is a curse or a gift. What do you think?
I think it's a gift. And I'll also tell you another thing. For about 30 or 40 years, I've had so much energy of different people in my life that it's actually, when it was first happening, you know, I thought I was going around the twist, yeah? And then I had to be totally alone for many, many, many years, Howard, okay? Then I realised, I mean, it took me years to realise what was going on. Now, as we are happening now, when I meet somebody, mm-hmm. if they're going to become ill, say, like, within a year's sort of time, I would know
you
about
know.
It.
And what sort yes, of, listen, I, can you do this over the phone? I'm asking this for a reason. What sort of energy do you get from Hayley and me? And Amy?
Hayley and Lee? No. Well,
it's all good, isn't it?
One experience, you know, I had 15 years ago. And honestly, Howard, people might think I'm crazy, but I can assure you I'm not. Well, what happened...
You know me. When I do that Sunday show, Lavinia, you know that I hear... I listen because some of the most outlandish sounding stories turn out to have something to them. I've got to go, Lavinia, but listen, have a lovely night. Please take care.
Can I say something to you before you go, Howard?
Very quickly, as long as it's not a horrible premonition.
Your voice is very, very therapeutic.
Is it?
Okay.
It's healing,
and
is
I
it?
Honestly believe you're very, very much so. And I believe, as I'm talking to you, I'm actually getting a feeling as I'm talking to you about you.
Really?
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. And whoever you are, I honestly can say that...
I'm scared.
You are a lovely, lovely person. No, don't be scared, Howard. Embrace it. That is the way. Embrace everything comes into you.
I don't know what to say about that. Lavinia, to be continued in Bermondsey. Thank you for that. I'm giving out energy, apparently.
So good.
It all comes from the voice. Are you listening? Maybe I could do hypnotherapy or something. You know, maybe I could do that on the side. You're feeling very sleepy. But not right now, because we've got another 35 minutes to do. And tonight we're doing, because we did all that political gubbins for 2 hours or so, we're taking calls straight to air. Our number here, 0344-499-1000. Be here.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Dog has here to make your day. Ain't rescues and we're here today. Cause our humans over there love us in every way.
Isn't it great? Isn't it cool? Yappy. Oh 0344-499-1000. That's that version of Pharrell Williams' Yappy, or rather Happy, Yappy Happy, that I told you about before. Open lines here. Calls going straight to air. 0344-499-1000. Paul is in Northampton. How are you, Paul?
Howard, it's a pleasure to speak to you, mate. Thank you for taking my call.
That's all right.
Howard, I don't usually talk. I use you on a Sunday night. I listen to you. I've listened to you a lot, actually.
Thank you.
But Howard, all it is, you brought me up to know that happened in Halls in North London, and it happened in around about 2007. And it was, how can I put it? It was 5:30 in the evening, around about September time. And it wasn't getting dark. It was around about that time. But Halls in North London, I was living to a depot, or around that area, should I say? I'm not going to say exactly where, but around that area. There's a big electricity line for the Halston Road Junction, as you know. Now, all of a sudden, I looked around the depot. It was quite a small depot, but there's nobody there. There was loads of trailers on the bays. I was about to reverse my trailer on the bay. Now, I looked up, I couldn't believe it. I mean, there was a lot of crowd moving in the area, but it was like a mist. But honestly, I had to stop. Obviously, I had to stop reversing. I couldn't believe it. I just looked up. I've never, ever, ever believed in these things before. But I looked up. It was like a movement. It was like a mist, but there was definitely something within that cloud. And I think what it was hovering above this electricity, hell of a lot of electricity bolts going there, and it stopped, and it swayed. I called out to anybody. Nobody was in that in that yard. Unbelievable. It was only in the warehouse. But honestly, Howard, and my twin brother had just passed away about 6 months previous to that. But I've never, ever, and I've never talked to anybody about it, to be honest with you.
Thank you for telling me.
Say, yeah.
What do you think it was then? What do you think it was then, Paul?
I've seen UFOs. I've been in the Air Force. There has been only reported things, trusts and stuff like that. I looked and I just thought, I don't know. I just think there's more intelligent life out there than me. I really, really do. I've seen that, and nobody's going to tell me not to believe it. What I saw. I saw something like pilots do sometimes. I saw something that I'd never ever see again. Not on this planet, anyway. It was really, really.
Straight out of the X-Files, I'd say.
Stunned. Yeah. I had to stun. I just had to stop for 5 minutes and just thought, wow, I've just seen something, man.
You said you were in the Air Force, and you had experiences in the Air Force.
I didn't have experiences, but we were on the Mentorship Airfield and stuff like that. I've been in the Air Force, I've been in the Falklands, I've been all over. But not over Halston, in London, North London. I saw that. And it was quite, how can I put it, nobody else could see it. There was a lot of movement there. There was a lot of energy there, Howard. I mean, I'm not just saying this, man. Half past five, in the early evening, or afternoon, around about September at that time. I just couldn't, how could I put it? I just took my arm out of the window and just waved to it, because I knew it was definitely something.
So time to start worrying when it waves back, though. Did it wave back?
I've seen a Northern Lights before going across the Sheffield Pennines. I've seen a play Northern Lights before, mate. I don't know if they wave back, mate, but I'll tell you what. I think there is a definite extraterrestrial life out there. A lot. We're on this planet, mate, but I think we're going to another planet as well.
I think I'm inclined to agree. And you've never told anybody before tonight about this?
Not really, mate, not really. I have my own thoughts about it, I don't know myself to him, but I really do believe in extraterrestrial, I really do believe in an afterlife as well.
Well, listen, thank you very much for telling the story. I don't know what to make of it, Paul. It sounds like whatever it was knew that you were alone doing that delivery there in that depot and picked you out for this.
When it was over, the electricity, where it was just recharging, the batteries, we say, it's over the electric in this.
So whatever, I'm sorry, I was slow on the uptake there. It was, they were looking for power. They were looking for energy.
You never know, there was over Halston Road Junction, where I was near, and there was a lot of electricity bolts going from that junction. So, it was just hovering over there, seeing electrical field, energy field, if you know what I mean. But it was hovering over there quite a long time.
But, you know, they do say that's why UFOs are often reported over power lines, military bases that have, you know, high-energy equipment and stuff like that, because if you believe in them, and if they are out there, they need power, and they are deriving that power from us.
And it just stayed, it was quite remarkable how it not camouflaged itself, but it was definitely sussing out something there, Howard. Like I say, you believe me, you don't believe me, but that's all I saw, mate. Nothing's, until I go to my grave, nothing's going to take me from that.
I have no reason whatsoever not to believe you, mate. I have no reason not to believe you. That's an astonishing story. I think everybody, listen, my belief is that everybody has at least one of these experiences in a lifetime. Whether they affirm that fact, in other words, whether they admit that to themselves, or whether they don't, is another issue. But everybody, I think, goes through these things. And I've been lucky enough to have, you know, ghost experience. I believe that I really did see an alien, and, you know, I'm not off my rocker. Really, Hayley, I'm telling my producer that. She's very sceptical about that. Paul, thank you very much for that. Please take care.
You're quite welcome, Howard. See you on another planet, mate.
I'll see you there. Right. Alpha Centauri, 5:30. You buy the beers. That's Paul, who was delivering and had an experience with an energy-sapping thing.
Do you think there was a significance of 5:30?
Maybe.
Just wondering if it was like numerology or something.
No, you know? Maybe that if you divide it by 19...
Yeah.
You know, 19.7 degrees is supposed to be
significant. I feel like he thought it was quite important that it was at 5:30.
Well, maybe it was.
Who knows?
Maybe 5:30 is when whatever extraterrestrial vehicle runs out of power.
Ah.
Because they've had a busy day UFOing.
Oh, true.
And by the time you get to 5:30, then it's time for a break.
They've had enough, yeah.
Well, that's probably it. Yeah, so that's probably why, you know, they probably see them over motorway service areas. There was a very famous case, and you, my listener, may be able to help me about this. I know some of my unexplained listeners are listening. I think it was at Chicago Airport. I'm pretty sure that it was Chicago. I can't look it up now because I brought my little tablet in, but I've got to put a code into it, and it's just too much faffing around. But I think it was Chicago Airport, and I think it was this lovely tablet I've got, a lovely little...
Just can't use it. It looks really pretty, but you can't use it.
It's nice.
It's nice to look at.
It's only a cheap one. It's a Samsung, but it's very, anyway.
It's lovely. It's just a shame you can't use it.
It's just a pity I can't use it. I think it was Chicago's O'Hare Airport, as we say in Liverpool. Chicago O'Hare Airport. And I think it was... so sorry. Chicago O'Hare Airport in 2006. I don't know why I'm laughing, because if you were there, you wouldn't be laughing. But there was a craft hanging over the airport. Literally, that was photographed, and that's why I was trying to find it on this device. It's sad, isn't it, really?
That'll be tomorrow's lesson.
That'll be tomorrow, yeah. Excuse me, I'm already on the Twitter. I'm Hughes on air. Not right now, I'll check them later, but if you want to tweet. You know, I'm here all week, so if you'd like to call at any point during the week, my God, I'd like to speak with you. It's a nagging need within me, Hayley. I'm sorry, I've got you laughing now, haven't I? You know when you start
laughing with you, not at you.
Oh, God. When you start laughing without real reason, I think that's when you start having a problem, isn't it? God, I think I need a long... You know what it was? It was all that political talk.
You've now gone hysterical.
Well, no, when I decided 6 years ago now to eschew life as a news person and become a sort of lightweight entertainment character...
Lightweight.
No, when I decided to do other things with my life, you know, it was a real big decision, and I never thought I'd be going back to it by doing a couple of hours about Brexit and the ins and outs of that. I mean, it really does do your head in, doesn't it, all of it? I'm just going to check in. Just talk a moment, will you, Hayley? I'm just going to check a tweet here.
One day you'll be able to do that on your tablet.
Well, I know that. No, have you got all the apps for here, for this building?
Do you mean all the apps?
Well, you know where you...
What language are you talking?
No, look. We get tweets and texts in here at the radio station.
Yeah.
Can I put those on my tablet?
You can get the Twitter on there.
Yeah. You're kidding.
I know. It's like magic, isn't it?
Well, do you mean there's an app for it?
Is there an app for the World Wide Web and everything?
You haven't noticed I've been going around the country in accents now, and you're not at all impressed, are you?
It's because I can't make out which one's which.
You telling me? John, I'll read your text during the break here. It's a long one, and I don't think I can read it straight off air here. And Pete, you're a cynic. What a skeptic you are, Pete. Well, it's nice to hear from you.
What's it about UFOs? Doesn't believe in them.
Oh, no. Jazz, thank you very much in Brighton. He says, shame on you, Howard Hughes. I don't know what it is I've done, but I'm ashamed. I wasn't very pleased about the Brexit debate.
Okay. Yeah, but we kept it short, didn't we? We did it for as long as we needed.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did a good job
at
it.
Jazz in Brighton. Now, you see that if you were listening to all of it, I said that I am now as undecided and my head is as done in as anybody else now. So, you know, that's not entirely where I'm coming from, Jazz. I hope you know, being from Brighton where I lived for a while, I know you're a man of sense and balance, so you'll understand what I'm saying. That you know, it's all left me. As it's probably left Hayley, as it left you, I want it all to be finished now.
Me too.
Whatever happens, you know, it's just too much. Because if you work in this business, or if you drive a milk float, it's too much for people now. They've had it.
Do they have milkmen anymore that go down the street with milk?
Yes, of course they do. No, listen, when I go home, the milkmen around the area that I live in, because it's sort of southwest London, Surrey fringes, Darlings, it's Southwest London, Surrey Fringes, don't you know? But they have to deliver the milk at 2 o'clock in the morning, because if they were to do it at 5 o'clock in the morning, people are commuting by then. So they'd be dodging the buses.
Do you hear the clanking of the glass as they put it down?
No, it's wonderful. The guy who, I don't know what dairy he's from. You know, back in the old days, it was Express Dairies. It was the big one in London. But I don't know, I'm not sure what it, but 2 o'clock in the morning, if I'm at home and I've got the window open, I'll hear this sort of motorized whooshing noise going on outside. And it's the guy, and then I'll hear this like, I'll hear this noise.
Yeah, that's
it. See, that's it. We do sound effects as well.
High budget
it.
Ones as
and,
well.
And it'll be, and then it'll stop you like that. And then you'll hear two footsteps. You'll hear the guy. And then followed by as he puts them down.
I feel like we're on the Archers or something.
It's good as no, not that. Stopped listening to that years ago. Shane says, do an Aussie accent. Do you think I should? Shane, I think you'd be offended if I did, because to your ears, as a real Australian, it probably won't sound like it. I love Australia, I have to say. I visited. Did I ever tell you that I worked with Chris Tarrant on the radio? We did shows all over the world.
I don't think you mentioned it.
Well, no, I did.
One day, we've got the rest of the week.
No, let me reveal that to you. And I used to love when we, and it was all on the company. Could I afford to go to Australia? Gee, I can barely afford to go to Bognor. But they used to fly us all out to Australia, and we do these great shows. And the people we met were so lovely. We did a show from the Great Barrier Reef. And the guy there, the reef conservation officer, started phoning me up at home just to say, how'd all your friends down here miss you? We all think you're a real bonzer guy. We love you here. See what I mean, Shane? You're sorry you asked for that now, aren't you? Now, open lines tonight for the next 20 minutes or so. Then it's Daryl's going to be here. Daryl is going to be doing his stuff through the night, picking up the mantle, running with the baton. Oh, no, that's a boat. The baton. 0344-499-1000. We get your call. We stick it straight on the air right after this.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Talking with you, this is Howard Hughes.
Yes. That's music to my ears. That's my disc jockey jingle. Hasn't been heard for far too long. Shane, thank you very much. Well, Shane, I warned you. I told you. You know, my Australian. Shane says the Australian accent needs work. I think it just needs burying, Shane. But I tell you what, if I ever come back to Sydney, a city that I love, if I can ever afford to go there, I certainly want to meet you, and you can teach me to do it properly. Okay, open lines, 0344-499-1000. Calls come in. We take them straight to air. In Ballindulloch, in Murray, who's calling Talk Radio?
Hello, Howard Hughes and Hayley Hayes. I usually phone Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle. I wanted to call you to lighten the mood after the Brexit discussion, which has been doing my batteries in. I will now sing something for Ian if he is listening. Hit it. Cheer up, Grumpy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a Daily Believer and a Homecoming Queen? Yeah. You once thought of me as a white knight on his steed. Now you know how happy I can be. Oh, and our good times start from then, without dollar one to spend. But how much, baby, do we really need? Good night.
Good night.
That was the best call we've had all night.
Gobsmack doesn't even cover it, really.
That's brilliant.
From Ballindulloch and Murray. Well, purportedly, or maybe anywhere. Maybe it's just shielding its identity. So, I don't know, who was that? Was that Robot Man?
Or Alexa? I don't know.
But, you know, it's just great when the people who call Ian Lee call me. It's a good feeling.
It's a compliment.
Something like that. Adele says, not the, it's Adele Haywood. Adele, nice to have you there. Loving the show with Hayley. So entertaining. Give them a regular spot on Talk Radio. Hang on, I'm just listening. Loud cries outside of, no. Adele, thank you for that. Nice to know you're there. Where else? Oh, Robin in the US. Robin, nice to know that you're there. And Robin loved the old disc jockey jingle there. See, I told you, I know you said, that's cheesy as hell, that is, you said. And I said, there are still devotees of these things. Open lines it is. You call, we stick you straight on. There's no, you know, what do they call, what's that word? There's no intermediary. Right, so, and when I say it, I mean it. Here comes Pablo in Newcastle. Hello, Pablo.
Oh, how do, Howard, how are you?
Oh, fine. It's about 2 months, maybe 3, since we last spoke.
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed.
I was just wanting to pick your brains, is obviously having an ear and an eye on the supernatural, as it were.
I do.
Whether you had any kind of preference horror film-wise.
I don't know. When I was at school, they kept bringing round reruns of a movie called Witchfinder General. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah, Vincent Price.
Vincent Price. Yeah, yeah. Vincent Price speaking in this kind of, hello, I'm Vincent Price, and I'm very scary. And there used to be a cinema in Liverpool called, all these underage kids would go and see the horror movies that were like 18 rated, and we were like 13. And we go to the Scarlet and watch Witchfinder General because it was, well, frightening. There'd be people's, you know, limbs removed and gushing blood and stuff like that. Maybe Witchfinder, I'm trying to think. Witchfinder General. American Werewolf in London is a bit scary too, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Very good. That's the same... forget specific his name, but he's the same guy who did...
Graham Norton. Oh, no, we had that out last week. It's a name that sounds like Graham Norton, yeah, yeah.
I am just cycling back from my own radio show that I've just finished on a community radio station.
Okay, well, since it's a community radio station, then it's not sort of BBC or anything like that. What's it called? We can name it. It's all right.
Well, the radio station is Nova Radio North East. It's based in the northeast of England, in Newcastle specifically. And my show is Pablo's Vault of Horror, which is on 10 till midnight every Tuesday, except for next week, because I'm away at a caravan.
This is a shameless plug, Pablo. Have you got a jingle for it?
I do, not available, because I am literally on bicycle at the moment.
That's okay. I'm just thinking if you needed somebody to say something like, this is Pablo's Vault of Horror.
Howard, I would very much like to take you up on that offer. I'll be in touch.
This is Pablo's Vault of Horror.
That's it.
See, I'm available.
You know, short of Bob Harris, you'll be a good fit.
No, I'm always short of a Bob. So anyway, what else prompted, after your radio show, what else prompted you to call tonight then?
Oh, well, I just thought it's very rare that I get a listen on a Sunday night, and...
You'll have to fix that.
So I thought I'd take the opportunity, and obviously it's kind of my realm, although I will say I am very much a sceptic and all that sort of thing,
Do you only talk about local horror when you're on air doing Pablo's Vault of Horror? Do you only talk about stuff happening there, in Newcastle?
Well, a sad tragedy of recent times is that Alan Robson, who was a local radio legend in the northeast, he got kicked off Metro FM, and our radio station jumped in and did a simulcast of his last show. Mm-hmm. And he used to do a Halloween show from Seton. Delaval Hall, which is one of the most haunted places.
No, I know, but I know his stuff like that. He's a bit of a legend, along with Pete Price in Liverpool, who was on air an awful lot, who I used to fill in for a long, long time ago. Hey, Pablo, listen, nice to hear from you. I think what happens is, as the show goes on, more people call in. So, Pablo, I'll love you and leave you. We'll talk again, and Pablo's Vault of Horror, be there. Open lines, it is. Alistair's here. Hello, Alistair.
Alistair. Oh, evening, Howard.
Come on
how
now,
you?
You've got to be as fast as we are.
have you got Amy with you? Hayley with you?
I have got Amy behind the glass. Say hello, Amy.
Hello.
There you go. See, there's the proof.
Hi,
and Hayley's here as well. Hello.
Hello.
And I'm Howard. Hello. It's like Blue Peter.
Have you had a good show?
I wouldn't go that far. No, we've had a show.
I have to confess that I've only just tuned in. Because I had a really great experience tonight. I've become sober. Mm-hmm. Nearly 6 months now. After I was an alcoholic.
Well, that's an achievement.
I've been attending Alcoholics Anonymous for nearly that same length of time.
And do you have to stand up there and say, I'm Alistair and I'm an alcoholic?
You do say that, but you don't stand up.
Okay.
but you do. You don't have to. That's the sort of, you know, what people tend to do. But
well, you know what they say about alcohol, don't you? And here comes another thing from my grandmother, who used to say, alcohol is a good servant and a bad master.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how
absolutely.
Are you feeling now? How are you feeling this minute?
Oh, absolutely wonderful. I mean, my life is... I was saved, actually, because I would have probably died had I not, you know... seen the light, so to speak.
Well, I mean, being serious about it, how do they yeah. get you off the habit? Because they do wonderful work for people.
Well, yeah, I mean, initially I needed to just spend a day in accident emergency going through a detox. So they gave me the relevant medication for that, and I just had to stay there for 8 hours because I was kind of shaking badly and everything. Mm. And then I was with friends and they were very supportive, and because of that I thought I owed them something. So that was the first step for me to say to myself, right, I'm not going to drink, I'm going to get to a meeting.
Mm.
And that was the start of my journey. And I now go to 3 meetings a week. And
six months is a major big achievement, and you know, beating the cravings, that's the most, the people tell me this, that beating the cravings for it, the most important thing, so you don't get the cravings now.
That's correct.
Well, that's great.
And along with it, I found a higher power.
Have you?
Now, for me, I mean, people can choose whatever they want. They don't have to be believing God, but they can believe in some sort of spiritual thing.
Okay, and you believe that helped you through this process?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Everybody has to find a way, Alistair, and if that's your way, then fair play. And, you know, I wish you many more years of sobriety. It's a hard thing because it's, you know, life is tough. Life is stressful.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people, you know, they go home and it's a glass of wine turns to another. And that's how people, and that's ordinary people that I've known. So you've done a really good thing, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I just want to say that, you know, yourself and obviously you're facing Ian and Kath, but they've been a real help. I'm sure Hayley and Amy will know that they've been a real help to me as well.
Well, you know, Ian's so a guy with a big heart. Big heart, that guy's a
I just want to thank, excuse me, just want to thank you all down there because, you know, you've been there when I needed to chat, and that's been really good for me as well.
So all right, well, please take care, and I'm glad to hear your story, and I'm glad that 6 months down the line it's going well. Open lines here. You call in, we stick you on the air. Caller on a mobile, your name, please, and you're on Talk Radio. That's very formal, isn't it? Who's calling? Hello? Who's calling Talk Radio? That's a better way of saying it.
Is that me?
It is you. What's your name?
Hey, up, Howard. It's Russ in Staffordshire, Litchfield.
Hello, Russ in Litchfield. By the old TV tower there.
Yeah, I'm not too far from there.
It's right by the motorway, I think. It's not for you to see it from the motorway.
Near Tamworth.
I know. I used to broadcast from that tower when I was on air in Birmingham. Sorry, what's going on with you anyway tonight?
Well, I don't know. I really followed that last call. Well done to Alistair.
Yeah.
It's certainly one hell of an achievement. So well done, mate. Keep it up.
Yeah. Six months is a long time. Yeah.
It is. Before he knows it, it'll be 12 months and it'll be 2 years. And he'll never forget the day that he packed it in. That'll stick with him. But I've got a bit of a weird story for you. I don't know what you'll make of it. It's certainly nothing. It's not as elaborate as UFOs.
Okay, now, because we're getting... I wish you'd called earlier. Because we're getting towards the back end of the show, can you do it in a minute?
I'll be quick.
Thank you.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago this morning... I work nights, so I went to sleep around 9 o'clock in the morning. My wife had gone to work. There was nobody else in the house. Woke up at tea time, having a coffee and a cigarette, getting ready for work, waking myself up. And I was on my just going through my phone and found a picture on my phone that was taken at 10:08 that very morning.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take it.
And what was it of?
I was asleep. It was a photograph of a giant life-size Winnie the Pooh that I bought my wife for her birthday when she was pregnant with my son 18 years ago. And it sat on top of some boxes.
Are you sure you just didn't accidentally trigger the phone when you put it in the car?
No, I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. No, it was taken in... The photograph was taken in my bedroom while I was asleep. Well, I don't like things that I can't explain, so, and I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I'm thinking of like how, the only way it could be is me sleepwalking. But, as I was saying, we're about to move house, we've got loads of stuff packed in boxes, and the gap in between where I would need to stand to take the photograph and this teddy is about 2 to 3 foot.
I can't explain that. Listen, I've got to go because it's late in the show. If you want to talk about that for longer or any other experiences in Lichfield by the big TV mast there by the M6, I would love to speak with you again. Sorry about that, but it's just so late. And if I don't speak with Daryl, he won't talk to me tomorrow night, so let's put him on. Daryl, you're on next. What's going on?
Screw my show. Let's talk to that guy more.
Well,
that was weird.
Now, Daryl, might call you. You never know.
We've got a bit of news for you, okay?
Okay.
So, no, it's all right. Don't worry about it, because it was okay with me, and so I'm sure it's going to be all right with you. First 3 hours is politics tonight. Is that all right?
Well, it was last night, and we got a bit of a hard time for it. We got a few tweets. Because we get around the topics on this show, and we get around the world, and we sort of meet fascinating people. Last night it was quite relentless, Brexit. On the fallow day, I promised that it wasn't going to happen. So we're going to do a bit. We have to do a bit. We have to do our bit.
No, it's only fair.
We're going to do...
We've done ours.
We've done our share.
We've done our...
Your
turn. But actually, I've got what I think is quite an interesting question to pose. So I'm going to do that after 1 o'clock this morning. I've been sort of really fascinated to get your take on it. We'll do that after one. But we're also going to get to some other stories as well. Last night, I promised that we would get around the stories. We are going to do that. I promise I will keep my promise tonight. We're going to speak to some really fascinating people, including a guy who's broken 2 world records for bird suit flying. You know where you put a bird suit kind of thing on and you jump off a cliff?
Yeah.
An amazing
and you
guy.
Fly.
Yeah, that's the face that I was pulling.
And
when
he's
I was
still alive.
He's still alive. Amazing story. We'll speak to him a little bit later on.
Daryl's here after 1 o'clock. How can you top that? Howard Hughes will be returning with Hayley Hayes tomorrow night, and it'll be a normal show. Please call in because I'd love to speak with you. Good night.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.